So I also wanted to start by just giving some brief disclaimers. As you know, the audio portion of this conference is being recorded, as is the chat log. An edited transcript of the chat log will be posted. The audio will be posted as well. We haven't decided exactly how we're going to distribute it. Most likely YouTube, put an MP3 up, etc., possibly iTunes. Still working on that. That may evolve as time goes on. So just be aware of that. We are already, and of course, I'm not a doctor either. It's another thing you always have to say at the beginning. Had a bunch of questions coming in already. The first one is, how do you forgive someone who has angered you when you think that this is the cause of my pain? This is guest 137 who contributed this question.
Well, Forrest.
That's a tough one, right? Yeah.
Yes. Find God for me.
Right. This is what happens when you write an amazing book, Steve. You know, everybody thinks you know everything.
Yeah, well, I do know everything. Some of it makes no sense, though. But
all right.
Forgiveness, wow. You know, that's the key, though. I just saw that Dr. Zaffirides had posted something on that. And I thought, great, someone's finally saying it. Because I realized in myself, and these are some of the things that people are denying that are causing their TMS. They don't want to think, you know, that they're holding a grudge, especially against somebody they love. It's unthinkable. But they are. And so that's one of the mental blocks, one of the parts of the frozen brain that they deny. And so towards the end of the book, I talked about that, you know, forgiveness. And I put Dr. Jampolsky's example in there. He wrote a book in 1978 that was pretty cool. I can't remember the name of it, but the book was cool. And he had back pain severe, and he said he suddenly realized, I'm holding a grievance against someone in my lifetime. And when he did, his back pain disappeared. I contacted him. He lives in Hawaii now. He's retired, and he's a really sweet guy. But forgiveness is the key. And then at the end of the book, I think the last page or so, talking to Dr. McKenzie, the psychiatrist, and he said, don't forget to mention forgiveness. And I knew in deep within myself that was true, you know, forgiveness. How do you do it? Oh, man, how do you do it? I think, of course, it comes from growing as a person, maturing and saying, you know, that that person is me. There's no difference between me and that person. Like Thich Nhat Hanh, he states this over and over again. When you finally realize that that person is you, then you begin to see that person in a different light because they've only been given a different experience in their lives. Had you been given the same circumstances as they did, you know, either poor or rich or bad health or good health, you might be saying the same things they are. So when I look at people, I say, you know, that's me angry at me. And I try to look at myself and say, why am I angry like that? And it helps. It helps. Now, very few people can forgive everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. That's a personal thing. How do you forgive them? I think it's trying to see from their eyes at that point. And if you can't, then at least have to go around and try to purge that from your own system and say, I'm not holding this. I can't forgive them, but I'm not holding it in my body anymore. Because Thich Nhat Hanh said, it's organic. And this, which means, you know, these things like a resentment, I call them the big four, anger, resentment, sorrow, and fear. These things are held in the body. We only feel them because they're organic. If you feel anger, your body tenses, you know, or the fear, whatever, the body tenses. And so they are organic in that sense, and so you have to kind of get that out of your body. And forgiveness is the quickest way, I think, is the quickest way to say, ah. But that takes maybe a lifetime of growing and personal growth to do, and I don't have an answer for that. I wish I did. I would be really rich.
It's really interesting that you bring it down to compassion, though, bringing in Thich Nhat Hanh. I remember when you came into the chat room before, just our regular weekly drop-in chat, you talked about Thich Nhat Hanh and how he was important to you. But regarding compassion, I think it's important, I'll add, terrific points, by the way, I'll add, it's important not just to have compassion for them, but also to have compassion for yourself. Like if you're really angry at them, it's going to take a while to forgive them. you know, and that's okay. We can allow, we can be mindful of that anger that we have towards them, and over time it will decrease, but it may take
right.
a while.
Good,
as
that's
you
a good
mentioned.
Point, and I say that a lot is you can't really love somebody else if you do not like yourself. Because it starts right there. You have to forgive yourself. You can't forgive someone else until you at least forgive yourself first, because they're the same person. And Han talks about the idea of compassionate listening. That's what he says the key is, compassionate listening. Because, and I mentioned the guy in my book. He said, you know, he had such bad back pain. He was emailing me every day. I am in so much pain. And he said, after I talked to you for a while, I went and I talked to my wife at night. And he said, by the end of the talk with her, my pain was gone. He was crippled hours before, and when he was done listening to her and talking to her, his pain disappeared. And I think that's why I spent so much time on James Pennebaker's work. He's one of the gurus of journaling. Oh, there's something I probably should have mentioned before. Journaling's another one. I forgot to put that in there. But when you express yourself and you listen to them, the body can no longer hold it. Problem is, we don't know that we're TMSing, because it's because of repression. We have no idea. I didn't even know you had all these emotions, and that's why I mentioned alexithymia in the book, things like that. And my editor, who was an MD, he's part of the longest ongoing study on alexithymia, a 20-year study. He said almost all men in Western cultures are alexithymic at some point. We are just taught from the time we grow up, you know, that you're a man, be a man, you know, get over it. So you just kind of keep pushing through life. Women are much more in tune with this and much more ready to accept TMS, of course. But good point about yourself and compassion. That's a good point.
All right. I have another question in here. When you talk to your brain, this is from guest 586. When you
My
talk
favorite
to
guest 586.
I know. I've always thought that 586 was great too.
Yeah, it's better than 585 ever was.
Yeah, yeah. 585 really should be embarrassed.
Well, I should have said that. There might be a 585 in there.
There might be, and then it would be really, really awful. But when you talk to your brain during a panic attack, that this pain is psychological, do you phrase it in a negative statement or a positive statement? Fairly specific question, but okay,
yeah,
so you've got the panic
attack. I understand it. Can you understand that? Can you decipher it for me?
So it sounds like this is a person who has pain attacks. Guest 586, we do like you. You
yes.
can feel free to clarify in the chat. But yeah, so when you have a pain attack, I'm sorry, I said panic attack earlier. When you have a pain attack.
Oh, yeah, when you said panic, okay
yeah.
that changes it. All right. Yeah, I didn't understand that one. A pain attack?
Yes, when you talk to your brain during a pain attack and say that the pain is psychological, do you phrase it as a negative statement or as a positive statement? Do you say that this is not physical? So this is my interpretation. Do you say that it's not physical or that it is psychological? Which one of those is more important?
That's a good point. I mean, they're both equal. I mean, I'm getting this right from Dr. Sarno. They're both equal. Although I would say this. Go towards the psychological side. Don't even think about the word physical. You know, don't even say, well, this knee pain or back or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Don't even think about the body part. Think, okay, what's going on? That's what I did towards the end, and it worked nicely. Pain began to bound around in me. It was in my back for almost 30 years, and then it started to move to hip and elbow and all around. I would think, oh, what's going on? I would not think physically one iota. And when Dr. Sarno said, step completely into the psychological ballpark and out of the physical. I think it's good to not even think about the body. You know, so I don't know about the word positive and negative. Now, if you're thinking about I know what you're saying. On one hand, you're saying negatively this way, not the body, and positively this way. That was a tough phrasing of the question. But you think completely psychologically, but if they want to say, should I say something positive? Yeah, you know, I go right to the question, what's going on? What's going on? I didn't think negatively or positively about it at all. Just, all right, what's going on here? And then I quickly realized, because it always comes back to some type of ego-related thing. You know, I didn't. The word I keeps coming back. I am separate from everybody. You know, well, we're not. But, always positively, always, you know, don't think negatively on anything. and always psychologically. So I hope that answers the question. Always psychologically, always positive. Okay, that I'm okay. I'm okay. It's just a reaction I'm having based on how I learned to handle stress. This is how I learned to handle stress, which gets into a whole can of worms about childhood and all things like that.
Yeah, certainly. And hopefully we can get to that later on. Especially when you mention, I liked what you said when you said, you know, focus more on the emotions and never focus on the body, because it just seems that in TMS healing, your attention is vital. It really matters where you put your attention, because the pain is there to bring your attention to the body. And so if you focus on your emotions, or at least deprive the body of that attention, then that's a good thing. Do you think that is it important, would you say, to figure out what causes any given attack? So suppose you have a pain attack. Do you think it's important to figure out what's going on then? And in terms of the mechanism of healing, how does that work in your view?
Yeah, I think that it's a good idea to see if you have a trigger, you know, whether it's a smell or a sound or a person. I witnessed people when their spouse or kid or something would walk by them, they would go into a spasm. They would bend over. I say to them, because I'm a very observant person, I like to see that I'm like Dr. Sarno in that aspect. I can see people clearly, and I can see them, their husband or wife walking by them, they go into severe spasm. They're triggering it. And I said, you're having some marital problems, aren't you? How'd you know? Well, that goes without saying, right? But then they dug into that. So I think it is important to notice the triggers, to answer the first part of it. And the second part was something about the mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how does being aware of the mechanism and how you go from the triggering event to the physical pain, tell us about how being aware of the specific trigger that's causing the emotion. Okay, so suppose you're angry at someone, and that person walks by, and that causes the pain. One approach would be to say, okay, I'm not going to worry about, I know that my pain is psychologically based, therefore I'm not going to worry about physical causes. Another approach
right.
would be to say, I know that my pain is psychologically based, and it was specifically that person that I'm angry at.
Yeah.
So what's the mechanism by which understanding that connection works?
Right. I think you answered it as soon as you asked it when you said aware, the word aware. Mm. That is critical. That's part of the bigger knowledge therapy concept. Awareness is the first thing, isn't it? Because there's how we heal. And once you realize, all right, oh, I've got a trigger, and then I'm angry, and then you start peeling back, right, in your life. You start backpedaling. Oh, okay, and now I'm angry, and now I tend to do this. And I spoke about that in the opening, this light. To me, I look at it in the terms of the Enlightenment people, John Locke, Francis Bacon, Thomas Jefferson. I look at life that way in terms of Enlightenment. Now that you begin to make more aware what's going on in your life, or what Jung said, you know, the shadow is the black aspect, the dark aspect. Shedding light on it is the healing part. So it is the awareness. Okay, now people say, what do I do? Well, you can keep becoming more aware. Okay, all right, now why did I do that? Oh, okay. And if you talk to a therapist, somebody like Alan Gordon or Dr. Zaffirides, they start telling you, they're specialized in telling you why you're doing certain things. That's why they're so key to this entire movement. The awareness will heal you. I'm being triggered. But they first need to become aware that they're being triggered. But they're not. They're not. Because we don't want to face that part of us. You know, we're right. not aware of it until somebody points it out. Like I do to people, I point it out. Look, you're right. I've always done that. You know, or this place has always triggered me, or this and that. But why? Well, keep becoming more aware. Keep backpedaling. You know, and of course, that's where the experts come in. I'm not an expert on it. And so it's good to talk to people like that who are trained to say, all right, now what do I do about this trigger? You know, so hopefully that answers that.
Yeah, it certainly does. Okay. Next question. You discuss the type T personality quite a bit in your book. Could you describe what it is and how it relates to TMS? One of the common beliefs is that it's similar to type A, but this isn't the case, is it? And specifically, since the people in the audience today will have tend to have read other TMS books, could you compare that with just the notions of perfectionism and goodism, people pleasing, etc.? Is type T just those personalities, or do you want to expand on it or alter it? Like, what do you think is part of the type T personality?
Okay, that's a big question.
Yeah, you can kind of choose the part of it that you like the most.
I'll try to pick it part generally, I guess.
Yeah.
That's section A of the question. Section B. I did talk about it. I think my book is the first book that talks about, it goes into detail about the personality. And one of the things I was thankful for Dr. Sarno for doing was pointing it out. There's a personality type. And I never realized that I was part of that. And then that was another light bulb moment for me type tension. And so he said, you know, the first word in tension production is personality. Because I talked earlier about the body organically holding in anger and fear, that it reacts to something. The body reacts and it holds tension. Well, it doesn't to some certain personality types, like a type A is different than a type T. The type A, they tend to express themselves. They're outward and vocal, and they, like Dr. Sarno said, and I have to go with him on this because he's the clinician, he's the expert. He said they tend to have cardiovascular problems, and the type T, the pain problems. And he said the type T people, he said they tend not to have the cardiovascular problems. And although you can cross over, like I said, I haven't seen any type T person that's had all kinds of cardiovascular problems. And so it looks like, once again, the good doctor's correct. But it is to me, it's a very narrow type of personality. They are, like he eloquently said, they are good people. Their problems come about because they're trying to do what's good and what's right in their lives. And I recognize that instantly in myself. And, of course, you can call it perfectionism. That's another way of calling it goodism. I made a joke about it in my book, Goodistitis, Inflammation of the Low Self-Esteem. So I don't know if you can really define a person. It kind of degrades them to define them. But you can start looking at certain personality types, I guess. And the type T is different than the type A. Very similar between the two. That's why I wanted to point that out in my book. The type B that Friedman and Rosenman, they identified as being very relaxed. Everything falls off their back. Well, these people appear relaxed, type T, but they're not. They're wired inside, but they're not type A. They tend to be a mix of the two. And once again, I only do that as a literary device to make a point. It's like id, ego, and superego. And there's not really a real person inside you. There's not three people there distinctly and separate. But it's a literary mechanism to explain that there are inner workings and outer workings so that people can see it in their heads. They begin to imagine it and they go, oh, okay. Because once you see it, it goes back to becoming aware again. You're more aware. So by Dr. Sarno identifying the type T personality, he made me more aware. And so I wanted to try to expand on that and say, okay, yes, and people have said, yeah, I do react like that. I do. And the way you explain that, that was me, you know. And, of course, I teased in my book that every time Dr. Sarno was writing something, you know, that he was writing that about me. And he wasn't aware that he'd written so many books about me, you know. I told him, I said, I can't believe you wrote 3 books about me. And, but, the personality is key in tension production because the people tend not to let go. I've had people bluntly ask me, how can I forgive somebody? I said, well, how long ago did they do that? The 28 years. They're still mad at them. Mm-hmm. And the body never forgets. The unconscious mind, which is the body, Candace proved in the laboratory, and I could never understand it. I went and read that. It's too complicated for me as a neuroscientist. I'm not a neuroscientist, but I understand it, that our memories are held in our body, in the cells of our body. When we imagine an image of somebody, like right now you can imagine an image of something, that comes back through the cells in our body, these images. And so anytime you were hurt It's held in your body as memory. It's so important to purge that through catharsis. And the best way is forgiveness, I think. If I could put them in order, forgiveness first. That was a good question, by the way. The second is talking. Compassionate listening, which is part of forgiveness, and then the journaling underneath, you know, but they're all good in combination. But to become more aware of the personality type, and I don't know if I answered all of that question or not. Was there any other parts of that that they...
No, I think that's... the specific character personalities. So when you say type T, you're talking about goodist, perfectionist... What else?
Yeah, all of the above. And then, good is perfection. What else? The people are very intuitive. You know, I should have added that probably. These people are, it's funny, they're very aware of what's going on around them, but not what's going on within them. You know, they're so wrapped up in survival. In other words, they can tell you everybody that's mad at them and how that person feels and the air and the ambient around them. But in doing so, you give up your own sensation of what you're feeling inside of you. You become those human robots that Sifnios and those guys talked about as the alexithymics. You're doing the right things. I want to do the right things. I'm going to do the right things. It's going to cost me my happiness.
You know, I have to say, I have to say that one of the, I'm going to interrupt. one of the parts of your book that spoke to me the most that I really loved is where you talked about how had you contracted situational alexithymia, because I could absolutely relate to that. You know, I had
secondary alexithymia.
Yeah, I had it for 18 years. You had it for, I think, 27. And, you know, you just, when you have really bad TMS, your life is such an emergency that you feel like you're not able to focus on what's going on inside of yourself. You know, you don't have time. It's a luxury that you can't afford.
It's about taking care of others. I gotta take care of them because I don't want to fail in their eyes.
Right.
You know, I don't want to fail in their eyes because they don't like to be criticized back. Or they feel as a failure again. And it comes down to low self-esteem and all those things. But that all comes back to childhood again. The development of the persona begins early. I read all of Jung's work and Freud's work. It took a long time. But, you know, he said it developed maybe in the first 5 years of life. The first time that you're shamed as a person, you begin to block certain things. A part of you freezes in your mind. That's it. I don't want to do that again. And it actually will drive people into careers. People that are in their careers now may have been shamed in some way of going to those careers by somebody at some point, or gone the opposite way. Like I talked about Karen Horney's work, you know, she did a great job of breaking it down into compliance, aggression, and withdrawal. That's how people handle stress, parental indifference or criticisms or things like that. And so I think that the type T fell into the compliance mode or the withdrawal. I fell into one of the two. To try to become unassailable by becoming better in your job, more money, more pay, more goals, more degrees, all these things. You're trying to overcome the original shame, you know, early on, that I'm better, I got to be better, I got to be better, better, better. And then at some point you realize this isn't me at all. Mm-hmm. That's the midlife crisis that Jung coined. That's the word. And I noticed recently, especially in the last 3 months, I've gotten maybe about 1,200 emails so far. And they're saying, you know, they're late 30s and early 40s. That is big. That is a big time. And once again, the good doctor was so intuitive. He noticed that early on that, you know, most of the people, 30s and 40s, and that is the age of midlife where you begin to turn around and pivot and say, oh, wait a minute. I'm going to look back now. Jung said that's the move from the natural phase of life where looking at your concern is with the outer world only, and you pivot now and you begin to look at the inner world, which he called the cultural phase of life. Now I'm going to go back and look at why I'm here. That's when you really, really, really grow. That's life right there, is looking at the inner world. That's where all of the answers are. And I believe that even scientifically at the quantum level of healing and science and all of those things, the inner world is the true world. It's the true world. But Yeah, a couple people said, you know, the book was really good, but he got off on some tangents. I didn't. They just don't understand why that is connected. Those things are important, the early things like that, and the quantum healing and shaming and things like that. Those are all very important. If you want to look at the whole picture, you know, if you just wanted me to repeat what Dr. Sarno said, then I could have done that, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to take that great work of his and expand on it. Say, look, he's right. He's so right. Not only did I heal, but I've helped a lot of other people heal. And I want to explain it more because a lot of people said, you know, he was right. But he left me hanging, man. He left me hanging. I didn't know what to do. I never felt that way personally. I thought he said, okay, this is what I see. Now go and find a way to heal. That's what I saw from it. But people like to say, they like to be led, you know, give me A, B, C, D, E, F. And they want a chart. And so that's why I said, you know, this is what you need to understand. Boom, 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 boom. This is what you need to do. Boom, 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 boom. And even then, you know, I think some people, they resist it because they're psychologically afraid to step into that quantum world and to begin to heal. And that's understandable. And I'm not saying you failed or anything like that. But the trying is the part. You know, the old cliche, the old aphorism, the old platitude is the journey is the destination, right? That is true. It is true, as beaten as that, as played out as that term is, the journey is the destination. That's where we become the good people. The real good people is to look inward. And so I don't know what that has to do with hot dogs, but I guess say about that.
I see. It's interesting. You mentioned the quantum healing. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, to find God again. One of my hobbies. Yeah, how do I forgive everybody in my life and tell me about quantum healing? They don't even understand it, but it is fascinating to me. It is fascinating. I can talk quickly about it. You know, tension arises anytime something's divided. And that's why the theme of my whole book is that tricordification, to get the hearts back together. And that has to do with forgiveness. When we're divided from a relative, there's tension. You know, when we have a fight with them, we haven't talked to them for 10 years or anything. Everybody has them. It's part of life. There's tension there. That's energy. You can take it back to anything that's divided, particle matter or whatever. Energy is created when it's divided. And I don't care. I minored in calculus as an engineer, and you can only divide something one time. People say, no, you can divide things by thousands. You can only divide it once. Those two new parts are divided once again. You see what I'm saying? That you only divide it one time. That's why I mentioned monad, that means one, and dyad, two. When you divide anything, it causes tension, and you can take that back into particle matter, all the way back to the Big Bang, boom. That's life. I see it at that level. You know, I see a really big picture of it, but it comes down to the relationships in life. The relationships are life itself. That's why the first statement of my book was, life is relationship. When that begins to get divided, and it happens at birth from the mother, life is born. You know, and Mackenzie said to me, yes, but that is a natural part of life. You can't overcome that separation rage when the baby's born. From there, those scars of separation, the life begins. It gives them that energy and the anger, you could say, because the baby's in full-blown panic mode when it's born. In so much panic, sometimes they used to smack them on the rear end to get them to breathe, but they're in panic mode. They're even afraid to breathe at some point. They don't know how to breathe. And so the first conditioned response is breathing. Once we learn, hey, this breathing thing's good for me, I think I'll keep doing it, you know. So they do that. And the second conditioned response, I think, is crying, because the baby quickly realizes, if I cry, I get people to come to my needs. And so we use that the rest of our lives. Freud said, you know, you get sick, the child quickly learns, hey, this brings people to me. If I say my stomach hurts or if my leg hurts or whatever, it brings people to me. Now, I'm not saying people are using this on purpose. Of course, I'm not saying that. But unconsciously, the person knows, I get more attention this way, you know. But like me, I never liked attention. This is all tough for me to even do, even to write a book. I don't like it. But I knew it would be necessary to spread this message. But it does come down to that division and that separation to me. And I think, personally, you know, I have no proof once again, it all comes back to the original part of life, the separation. There's some type of elegant message there, but I don't know what it is. but I'm going to spend my life trying to find out what it is. Okay, that may have been a tangent, but some people want to know that.
I think so. You brought up the forgiveness question early on. It was a great question. Someone had a follow-up question. Guest 413 had a follow-up question. They said, so if you forgive them, why does the pain linger?
This is a good question. You really haven't. And I'll answer that by saying, just because you understand why somebody did something to you doesn't mean you forgave them. No, I get that a lot. As a matter of fact, I remember reading that about that country singer. I forget her name. She was adopted. Big country singer, Faith Hill. She went and found her birth mother. And, of course, you want to know, when you're separated at birth or as a young child, you want to know why. You want to know why. But just because you can sit down and say, okay, that makes sense. You know, they did this to me. They did this to me. That doesn't mean you forgive them necessarily. Forgiveness is a very personal thing. It's a thing that I think a lot of philosophies are based upon. And boy, I don't have an answer to say how, but the pain, maybe that's not the person that you needed to forgive. Maybe you forgive that person and didn't forgive yourself yet. I don't know. That's where the experts come in, like the Gordons and the Zaffirides and anybody else I'm forgetting. That's their job to understand that. They're trained in it. But I can say this from personal experience and from helping people, that doesn't mean you've forgiven them because you thought you did, you know, or maybe it's you or maybe it's somebody else. I don't know. I don't have the answers, but good question. Good question.
Have a question. I think you've answered this already, but it says, do you really have to find the underlying issues? It seems to tie into the psychoarchaeology thing. Do you want to say any more about that?
Yeah, look, I can quickly. Did they hear that, what I said at the beginning?
Probably.
like that.
Probably. I don't know. I don't know that.
Well, I can do it again. You can post it if you want. But probably not. I didn't find it. I said it depends on how debilitated you are and how many symptom imperative shifts that you're willing to put up with. And Dr. Sarno said it too, that if they keep shifting on you over and over and over, problem after problem, it may be time to sit down and talk to somebody. But you don't have to uncover that thing, the thing. Just knowing that you are reacting to something is enough on almost everybody that I've seen. Now, I never tell people to go to counseling or not to go. I don't tell them. That's a personal choice. You know, I do tell them, go get checked out by a doctor. I assume that I assume they've been checked out, or I wouldn't help them. But you don't have to find that thing unless you're bedridden, like that woman Helen that Dr. Sarno talked about for, I think it was 2.5 years. That's time to find the thing. And, of course, it was horrifically painful. It was horrific that she went through. Mm-hmm. And so if you cannot walk or function as a human being, you might need to find the thing. But for the people, well, the last 11 years I've been doing this, I haven't seen anyone that needed to find it. Just know I've got this personality. I react powerfully to certain things. And I don't express myself that well because I'm usually quiet. You know, you're usually a quiet person. And that you need to let go. I look at it this way. The whole thing, disease or pain, I didn't separate between the two because I considered them effects. Effects, you know, but I'm looking for the causes. That the disease and the pain are the lack of expression. These people never learned how to express themselves when they were little kids. They were never allowed to, or they never learned how to. And so that comes about. And I was thrilled a couple years ago when I saw that. Ayurvedic medicines, one of their main tenets was based on that, that the people get pain and disease because they're afraid to show their real faces, they said. I thought, that's true. That's the same as not expressing yourself. They're afraid to show the bad side of them and the good side of them because they were told, no, don't get angry, don't get this, don't get that, don't do this, be good, you know, toe the line, all of those things. And so as they get older and the stresses of life build up on them, their pain gets worse and worse because they don't know how to express it. they never learned or were told to shut down. And so to cope every day with their problems, they just shut their emotions off. Like that window in the limo that goes up, you know, in between you and the driver.
Mm-hmm.
They shut that window off, and they just don't know. They don't even know that they're repressing. They don't even know that they're angry. They don't even know that they have something to say, because there's some form of alexithymia in a lot of these people. And so I look at it that way. When the person is in their job and they have shoulder pain or neck pain so bad, I know, and I look at them, the first thing I think is, you need to say something. And that's why under that life is relationship at the beginning of the book, the first page, I said, we all need to be heard. That's right. Everybody needs to tell that story, because it comes back to Thich Nhat Hanh's thing again, compassionate listening. It, you can't hold that anger in your body if you're actually telling the person how you feel inside. There's something about it like a pipeline just comes pouring out. You know, now the person you're angry at could be dead, you know, and then you got to go back to forgiveness. You know, you can look into why that person did that to you. It doesn't mean you forgive them, though. So, yes.
Okay. So I'm gonna try something here. I'm gonna unmute Morcom, who has a question that he wants to ask.
Morcom. He sounds like the leader of the alien world. Morcom.
Isn't that great?
Bring him on.
Here he is. Morcom, you're online.
Nice to meet you, Morcom.
Yeah, glad to meet you too. I was struck on page 1920 of the book, Das Buch, where you list four phases of TMS and the timing of symptoms, onset of symptoms. It seems to me that although the initial time that I had my so-called herniated disc 10 years ago, it was definitely after the storm TMS. I'd been taking care of my mother with dementia for 5 years, working two jobs, managing 17 wrongful death lawsuits, writing two books, all in a failed effort to try and keep her alive forever, probably perpetuating my early neurotic relationship with my parents.
Right. Oh. You're trying to heal. Yeah, you tried. I'll take care of them to heal those wounds. You had the perfect storm going, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, afterwards, when she passed, I didn't feel anything at all because I learned to be a stiff upper lip kind of sufferer. And for nothing happened for 6 months until I inherited my parents' house, where I realize now I'd been abused for years.
Yeah.
And I'd always tried to stay away from there. So when the burden of responsibility of the house landed on my shoulders, I started running wildly every night. The strategy I'd always used to cope with the problem, but this time it wasn't working. I kept developing sciatica. It got worse and worse. I thought it was a hamstring pull. And then, kerbang, one day I had a massive TMS attack. Classic. Just what I didn't realize it was till I read Sarno. But gradually it went away with PT and this insane devotion to the work ethic.
Yeah, that's what I had.
And I got rid of it that way, but I wasn't at the root of the problem. So 5 years, 6 years later, when I started having, I realize now psychological problems, it came back. And I took a fall out running and landed on my left butt, where I'd had an old injury. I'd broken my heel years before. And so my case, so that was another phase of it, another one of these initiating processes. And, of course, I fell and landed, and I didn't feel any pain, and I ran in, and I said, oh, you got off easy. Then 3 or 4 days later, while I was under this intense self-pressure to finish this book and all kinds of other things, I started focusing on the stinging. Started with one sting one day, two stings the next, until I couldn't walk. And I've been working my way back from that. But what my question is, don't all of these triggers shade into each other, and the underlying condition is there first on a deeper level, and then you trigger it different ways. They all seem to blend into each other.
Yeah, exactly. And then Dr. Sofer, when he reviewed the manuscript, he said, now make sure you tell them that they're not different types of it, you know, because people will be arguing. He said, well, I've got one and I've got type three. There aren't different types of it. There are just different various stages that they manifest. And,
yes.
And once again, this is a literary device just to show people, why does it happen after, or why does it happen immediately, you know, things like that. But you had everything going on, and that is, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten calls and emails from people who said, I was taking care of parents.
Oh, yes.
But at the same time, they had a contentious relationship with those parents while they were alive. And so now they've got the added burden, and they've got the guilt for feeling bad about all those years. And so, no wonder. You had what I called blood in the water, you know. It was waiting to happen. The fall is the blood. Now the sharks inside of you come out after it, and they start attacking that. Any bump or twist or anything. Like, I had a person recently say, I sneezed and herniated 5 discs in my back, the doctor told him.
Sure.
I said, no, you can't do that. Hey, there's something else is going on there, you know, something big. And they said, how did you know? You know, it seemed like a sage or a soothsayer when I start predicting their lives for them. But it's always a relationship thing. And the stronger the relationship, like with your mother or your parents, the deeper that wound is, as you know. It sounds like you had everything going for it, everything. But you're fortunate to have found Dr. Sarno's work like I did.
Well, my mother was the one who protected me from my tyrannical father.
And I tried
to please by accumulating degrees and publishing articles. I realize that now. The process was totally unconscious while it was going on.
That's what I call the unassailability. We feel like if we just keep accomplishing, you know, well, we'll be good. Well, that doesn't make you a good person. It doesn't. But it does show you that these scars, early scars, can send people to greatness. And I used Edgar Allan Poe as just one example, extreme separation anxiety, and his body work showed it, and it was brilliant. They become oftentimes great artists and musicians because that is their way of expressing their lives. They express it through dance, through art, through music, and things like that. They never learned how as a kid to talk to their parents, or their parents, they were afraid of their parents or something. And so the artists often go off on their own, and they say, well, I'll express myself through this painting, you know, or this song or something like that. Or books like I did, or what you did, it sounds like, that you wrote and had
path.
A good job. And
taking the inward path.
Yeah,
turning
the inward path.
Well, I through the various work I've done in the self-education program and with Dr. Schubner, and just when I first read Sarno, I did what he prescribed. I noticed that when I was about 6 or 7 years old, when my parents were fighting and trying to break up, I noticed that they weren't paying attention to me, and that made me very angry. And one way I had of alleviating the pain of listening to them fight incessantly, I remember at night in my bedroom, was biting my arm and giving myself a great deal of pain so it would blot out the fear I felt of them.
Yeah, you just proved what Dr. Sarno said. You're proving exactly what he found. If you could focus on the body now, if you could give yourself a pain, now it would distract you from the emotional pain that you were suffering in the moment. If you could bite your arm, now your brain's thinking about that physical pain. You know, and that, yeah, it just keeps
That's
proving
where
him.
I think I learned TMS, but
right.
I would have never done that without doing the brain work in the SET or engaging Sarno. So it does give you a lot of knowledge, self-knowledge, doing this. It's a gift.
SCP is the Structured Educational Program on the Wiki, just for people who aren't familiar with the lingo. Sorry to jump in.
Yeah, but I know so much more about myself from doing these programs. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's the awareness that I was talking about. Just becoming more aware tends to relax the body a little bit, because as human beings, we want answers. Like Faith Hill that I just mentioned, her whole life she wanted to know why. It was the only question. Why did you separate from me? And if you talk to the great philosophers of all time, that's the main question of mankind. Why are we here? Why? For some reason, people are curious people, and they want to know why. And until they can put that to rest, they tend to have problems. And, of course, now the good doctor showed us our physical problems are coming from these problems. And I tried to expand on that, too. He didn't go into childhood a whole lot and things like that, but I wanted to show that separation anxiety was key, and that's why I went to Dr. McKenzie, who was just such a sweet guy. He's such a nice man. He's always been so helpful. But it begins at birth and how we grow up and things like that. And, of course, people say, well, how do you know it's not nature, nature versus nurture, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know TMS is not genetic, not at all. You know, you don't inherit a bad back. You don't inherit a bad knee and things like that. But I posed the question in my book, do we inherit the anxiety? You know, do we inherit that way of looking at life? I don't know. So it's probably a little bit of both in there somehow. But it can all be overcome, you know.
It's like a Bildungsroman, like several generations. That's what you find in Levin.
And in the Bible they call that, you know, the sins of the father is the phrase that they use. Sins of the father, you know. I finally understood that phrase. After years of talking about passing down things.
Where I think it's predicted through generations. Well, not predicted, but it's conditioned.
It's then Dr. Sofer and I talked about it. He says it is from watching the other person. And Richard Rohr, he was a Franciscan monk, he talked about this. He said, it's like a hall of mirrors. Every day we keep reflecting back to ourselves our life. And you have to break out of that hall of mirrors. We're
mm-hmm.
reflecting back a life that we think it's a certain reality, but it is not. It's our reality, but it's not the reality. And so when we see people get back pain and knee pain and certain diseases, we tend to get those things. If we're reflecting back what they're showing us, but we can break out of that. You break the hall of mirrors and break out of that reality, because it's a false reality. And Chopra talks about this a lot. You know, that's the quantum mechanics he's talking about. You've got to say, you know, this is the only reality that I have chosen. I don't have to get these things. I don't need to get back pain because my dad did and his dad did. You know, and, of course, I proved that. I'm the first one in the family to not have it. I'm the first one to believe this. the rest of the people don't believe it, and they're still in pain.
What I found this summer was forcing myself to go back to the mountains where I enjoyed tremendous successes as a rock climber, and just forcing myself to walk up peaks, no matter how much I hurt, each time I achieved a goal, I noticed that the pain level went down. You have to separate the pain from the condition, though. Sometimes you'll hurt more, but then you notice over time, with each challenge, you're improving in range of motion and strength.
Yeah,
I imagine
I did that too. Yeah, exactly, because you're training the brain to react differently to movement.
Exactly.
Like you expect because of this hall of mirrors you're reflecting back and forth, you expect pain with movement. And I think Dr. Sarno used those same words. The person expects pain with movement. Well, or even sitting, it doesn't matter. For a certain body position, they expect pain. But you're exactly right. It doesn't have to be that way. And by continuing to be active, you begin to break that relationship between the condition and the pain, like you just said. Exactly.
Yeah, your case certainly illustrates that. You tried to attack it head on.
Yeah, it slowed me down some.
I thought you did in my case, too, because I remember when I had my relapse, I went out and rode my bike 20, 30 miles a day, way more energy than I would have today. It seemed absolutely crazy, and yet the sciatica continued to get worse and worse. The more I attacked it, the worse it became. When you resist, it persists. It's like I was feeding a Mobius strip. The more energy I put into it, the worse it got. And I didn't realize it was my personality that was doing this to myself. And that's the revelation that seems to tip the balance toward healing. So I think you've answered my first question about the four phases, how they shade together. So I think I could leave this, pass this on to someone else who has a question.
Sure. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this was good.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate it. It's always good to get other voices in here. We have another person who wanted to ask a question. Found her through Facebook. Let's see if I can unmute. In the chat, she is guest 590. Can you hear me there?
I can. Is 590 there?
Chris? Oh, okay. Well,
somebody must have been a telemarketer.
I think so. All right, I'm going to ask another question in the interim. Chris, if you do come, feel free to jump in. Had a bunch of related questions, which had some kind of physical thinking to them. And I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with. And I think it would be great if we could get you to weigh in on those, because I think people just need to hear it. It's the way it goes. So guest 105 said, "Hate to keep bringing up the sitting issue, but sitting is the only pain I have not conquered. Any suggestions?" Richard L. said, "Ditto that, guest 105. I'm coming up on 5 years of coccyx tailbone pain, have not been able to get past it." And it says it hurts deep in the rectum, around the tailbone. I've had injections, acupuncture. Nothing has helped. I've given up looking for a medical solution.
Yeah, I think I know Richard L. He's a good guy.
All right.
I just started communicating with him. Good guy. Yeah, the sitting. Of course, as Dr. Sarno said, it was such a benign act. It's mystified. He's mystified that it could cause pain. But I was in pain my entire life when sitting. I just accepted it as my reality, and so once I accepted it, that's what it became. Now, I know Richard, he has an appointment with Dr. Rashbaum in December for the TMS diagnosis, so I'm excited for him. I can't wait till Dr. Rashbaum looks at him, you know, just to make sure everything's okay there, of course. But as long as everything's okay, it is a conditioned response. It is a conditioned response. And, of course, I wrote how I broke that, you know, the bull in the china closet again. Dr. Sarno said, you know, once I understood what Dr. Sarno meant, don't let it change what you want to do. I went and I attacked it and challenged it, which was not really a good thing to do. But my pain left that night, and I've never had pain sitting since that night. And I think it was the end of 2000 or early 2001, I forget. So 11 years. I've had no pain in sitting, and I had it my whole life, so I know it was TMS. And I did it by just sitting and refusing to get up, wave after wave of spasms that were almost knocking me out. Oh, it was brutal for about a half hour, and then boom, it was gone. Just like a bronc buster, you know, rides those horses. The horse was broken. I broke my horse, but I don't know. You have to get a medical exam, though. You know, make sure you're okay there first. And if the doctor says, I don't know, looks okay to me and everything. But the problem is the doctors add to the problem by saying, yeah, look at that there. You got something weird there. And they don't know. They don't know about TMS. And so they're fortifying the fear that you already have inside of you, which is a major problem. Major problem. That's why this wiki is so important, you know, for awareness Awareness would be the most important thing people take out of anything, I think. But
What you're doing too, spreading the word, you know,
it's a team effort.
It really is a team effort.
It's a small team. We're a small team. We're playing against the NFL, and we're like a bunch of guys with leather helmets.
But if we can,
T-54s for thigh pads, and we're up against the NFL's all-star team, the billion-dollar empire. And Dr. McKenzie, that psychiatrist that worked with me, he said, I give up. He finally gave up. He's worked his entire life to tell people that the biological causes of anxiety and depression were caused by emotional processes. And he wanted them not to get away from the pharmaceutical things. And he has a word that he uses called psychopharmacomania. He said, we're underneath the thumb of that right now. And what they're doing is just glossing over the problem. Well, I just throw medication at it, which causes the symptom imperative to shift. It doesn't cause the problem to go away. And he said he tried his whole life to get grant money, and he said, I've finally given up. He can't beat that multi-trillion-dollar machine. He just can't do it.
Of course, and you know, the way that I keep going is I say, well, it doesn't matter how many people you don't – I mean, it does matter how many people you don't help, but what matters a lot more is the number of people who you do help.
Yeah.
And we are helping lots of people. So
I know you are. I know that I am because I receive the emails. I at least get them in the right direction. They feel a lot better. Many of them, the pain has gone away. It's in the hundreds. I never wanted to keep track because I never thought that was important back then. But now people ask me, how many? But once again, that's TMSing. Really, who cares? You know, if one person can do it, I can do it. I never thought I could either. So anyway, any other specific questions? I'd like to say hey to Richard.
Richard, I think you're on the line. Can you hear me? Say something, Richard, if you would.
Yeah, here I am. Can you hear that?
Sure.
Hey, I can. Hi.
Welcome.
Hey. Yeah, good to hear you, Steve.
Yeah, it's good to hear you. I've been having good communications with Richard. He's a good guy.
Yeah, we're fellow songwriters.
Yeah. Yeah, except you were good at it.
It's a work in progress, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Just like life, right?
Exactly.
Work in progress.
Listen, I'd like to give a plug to everyone here for Steve's book. If you haven't read it, it's really an important book. I've read it twice already, and that's, you know, probably more to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really great book. There's very little like it anywhere out there. I've looked at them all, and I would highly recommend everyone here get it, read it.
Thanks. That's nice of you to say. I've never met Richard. That really means a lot more. If one of my friends says, you know, he wrote a good book, that's my friend saying it, you know, but I don't know who Richard is except that we started communicating, and it's really nice of him to say. I appreciate it.
Well, there you go.
And I'm rooting for you. I am really excited. Talk to a person today who got a TMS diagnosis. I was excited for that one, and I'm thrilled that person got it. That person has TMS. So, I should probably throw a shout out to that guy too. I didn't know anything about him, Rob, until today. His name's Gwats.
Oh yeah, Gwats. Yeah, New Jersey, right? Paul.
Yes. From what I heard from this guy, he is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
He gets it. Everything that I was told about this, this guy gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to try to start recommending him to people too. And I know Rashbaum does too. I mean, he published papers with Dr. Sarno. So I'm excited for Richard to get down there in December and get a good talk with him, you know, and see what's up, what's going on there. Because he's had some tailbone pain. He's having troubles with it, you know.
Yep.
So it comes back to deeper things sometime. Of course, we've talked about that. But the work will begin. If he gets that rubber stamp, then, Richard, your work will begin at that point.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it, too. You know, it's been, like I said, 5 years next month. And, man, that's a life changer, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I had 27 years I could not sit without pain.
Oh my God.
I don't know what people mean by tailbone. It was in my lower back. I guess you could say upper tailbone, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But it hurt. Now some days of course were better than others. Some days it was just a mild, you know, one or two on a scale of 10 nagging, you know, and it was like, oh, good day. Some days, I wouldn't even sit down. I was afraid of it. But that's the fear. The fear of sitting, it has to be overcome.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll help you to get that diagnosis, because that will erase some fear. Probably
right.
Not all of it. It would be cool if he said, yeah, you got it, and all of a sudden the pain left, you know, and magic fairies would jump around throwing powder all over you. Little people would dance with joy. It doesn't work that way. It does not work that way normally. I think that Dr. Sarno talked about the one lady who had the hip pain in his office, and he told her she had TMS, and she went around the corner, and she got mad at herself, and it went away. So she went back in and said, it's gone. He regrets kind of saying those things because of all the problems that it's caused people. It doesn't work that easily, but it can. It can,
right,
depending on the...
Another thing I'd like to, you know, mention, because you talked about it a lot in your book, is the, and I've certainly found it to be true for myself, is that the so-called pain management industry is a complete scam.
Oh, yeah.
It really,
I hate that word even. When I drive by the sign, pain management center, I think, oh, why would you want to manage the pain? Why would you want to get rid of it?
Let's get rid of it, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's such a huge multi-billion dollar profit industry, because I had 4 injections over the course of a year from different places, and I think the average cost per injection was $1,600.
Wow.
Yeah. So, why would they want to get rid of that? You know,
exactly.
Why would they want to listen to Dr. Sarno? Dr. Sarno said, if my ideas were to become commonplace, it would be economic chaos for the medical industry.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's no reason to. And so that's why it's such a small grassroots movement. It is growing so slowly, but it's small.
Yes.
Small, but yeah, they have pain management. Oh, that just irritates me. But
yeah,
they're telling the people that that's it. You're going to have to live with your pain forever.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's a bit like all the discussion now about climate change. There's still, you know, millions of people that don't believe it, you know.
Yeah. Anything. There are so many things out there people just won't believe because that's the reality that they've chosen, I guess. But then that becomes their reality. I don't know why people would want to live in pain, though. I don't know why you would want that.
Right.
I didn't, so I went like crazy. He gave me hope for the first time in my life, and I ran with it. Literally, I took off running. I started jogging every day, and I realized later on that was part of the freeze discharge response of the survival mechanism, fight, flight, freeze,
mm-hmm.
that there's a part that is frozen. There's a frozen part of the brain that needs to be discharged through running. I needed to unfreeze that part through running. So in other words, you're literally running from the problem when you're running. You're literally running from it, and I'm discharging that energy from it. And I remember Dr. Schechter talked about it, and Dr. Sofer talked about it, and a lot of the doctors that worked with Dr. Sarno to understand TMS, they were runners themselves. And they used running to discharge this energy, the tension energy, and they could no longer run. And so they were in a panic. And, of course, I think most of the doctors had this pain syndrome that went to him. And I think. I don't know about Dr. Andrea Siegel, if she did or not, but she's a nice lady, though. Talked to her a couple times. She was one of the first ones on board in the early 1980s. He went to her and he said, look, and this is what I'm seeing here. And she immediately accepted it. So she's been ongoing with this for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Very long time. But, yeah, it's the pain management things and all that. The industry is out of control. It really is.
And
Dr. Sarno doesn't have much hope that they'll change, because when there's money involved, that's it.
Well,
there's money there.
Of course, it's like the pharmaceuticals, you know, they're never going to give up. I mean, it's a huge multi-billion dollar profit center, you know.
Yeah, it's their entire existence. You're telling them, you know, everything you're doing, it's all wrong. Who's going to ever accept that?
Mm-hmm.
Who's ever going to accept that, you know? But I believe, like I talked about earlier in enlightenment, I believe that the truth will win out eventually. It may not be in my lifetime. Yeah, I do too. I may not be alive. But that's why I wanted to write a book, because I knew my book would be alive. You know, it'll keep going. So I said, I've got to get the word out there. This is too beautiful a message not to tell the world. And so I did. And this group here is so important, too. and other groups too. There's another TMS help group. That is very important. There's a couple doctors there that believe in it, and they help people too. And so it's so important to keep telling people about it. It's
that's
a very worthy cause.
I spent a week with Dr. Schubner about 3 years ago, and he's another really, really beautiful guy. You know, he's very, very committed to this cause, you know.
Was it for the tailbone pain, Richard?
Yes, well, there was actually, he does a class every year at Kripalu, which is a kind of a yoga center in the Berkshire Mountains. And it's about, I think it was 5 days. It was a class of about 12 people. And it was a great experience. It didn't, unfortunately, didn't help my pain. But, you know, this was early in his career on this thing.
Right.
But I think he's... I think he goes back there every year. You know, I think he's probably there recently.
Yeah, but you learned a lot about it, but it didn't help the pain much?
No, it didn't, no.
Yeah, so there's something deep there, I think. I know a little bit about your background, but I think it's there, of course, somewhere there that you need to talk to. And I was talking to Forrest. I didn't know if Arlene Feinblatt was still working or not, but that's the person I would talk to. If Ira Rashbaum gives you the rubber stamp, she was Dr. Sarno's go-to person, but I don't know if she's still there.
Is she the psychotherapist?
Yeah, Rob, you know more about her than I do.
Sure. So, Arlene Feinblatt was the first person who Dr. Sarno hired to work with him. She does a style of psychotherapy called ISTDP, and she's pretty old. She's working on a book. Book isn't quite finished yet. She used to have the domain name John Sarno's original therapist or Arlene Feinblatt.
Right.
Yeah, but and she's mentioned in The Divided Mind. I think she took down that domain, so I don't know what the story is behind that. Anyway, there are four therapists that, or I think of there as being four therapists. This is what Alan Gordon said. Dr. Sarno refers to most frequently. Arlene Feinblatt is the senior one. She taught most of those people. Then there's Fran Summer Anderson, another psychoanalyst in New York. Fran Summer Anderson frequently works with Eric Sherman.
I forgot about them. Yeah, Richard, there's two more not too far from you.
And then
Feinblatt
there's Bob.
And Sommers. Yeah.
And then there's Bob Evans, who's in New Jersey, who Matthew N.J. swears by.
I just heard about him recently a few days ago. Yeah.
But they're all pretty expensive. You need really good insurance.
Yes, I know they're expensive. They don't take insurance, I know that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can mow their lawns or something to help us out.
Maybe so.
I could pass the mic over to someone else. I'm sure someone else might have a question, you know.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. It was nice hearing your voice.
Yeah, Steve.
Too. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Next up is Chris. Chris, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Excellent. Now we can.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I had my computer on. You could hear it beeping in the background?
I could, yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
No worries.
It was actually funny because a minute ago when you unmuted me, I was actually on my way to the bathroom and I was like, oh my God, are they going to hear me? I'm like, Yeah.
So
you
caught
me like way off guard.
I heard the toilet flush.
That's what that was. No.
Did you really?
No, we didn't. We didn't at all.
Okay, but I'm fine now. I am decent now, so good.
Excellent.
But yeah, I put something on the Facebook page. It was, I can actually just maybe read it. It's a little synopsis of kind of what I've been dealing with.
I would say do it spontaneously. I think it'll come through more if you can just say it in your own words.
Yeah, so tell us something.
Oh, well, thanks, Forrest. okay. All right. Well, it started back probably about 7 years ago is when I first started having kind of a, I would say like a muscle spasm feeling on the right side of my low back. And I'm one of these people who has to know like exactly what muscle it is and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm like, oh, the quadratus lumborum is acting up. So, it just never went away. And at first, I just thought it was because I was working out a lot. At the moment, I was a group fitness instructor and a personal trainer. So I was like, maybe I'm overdoing it and everything, but it never went away. That was my very first symptom, just this tightness in the right side of my lower back. And then within maybe 3 years, shoulder pain developed. My neck got stiff. I couldn't really turn my head to the left very easily. It just kind of hurt. The muscle on the right side was really, really tight. And I developed a bunion on my foot and like just some other stuff, some tendonitis on the outside of my hip where the piriformis inserts. So just kind of these things came up. And basically I ended up, or actually before all that, I did have plantar fasciitis and carpal tunnel like out of nowhere for like a month, and then it went away. I stopped wearing the flip-flops because that's what they said was causing it. And then I wore wrist guard. Actually, I wore my rollerblade guards sleeping. So if anybody walked in, I'm sure I looked really weird. But and it all went away. It went away like, you know, normal. I was like, okay. But what's weird is that I didn't do anything repetitive. And as you can tell by my lack of computer skills, I obviously was not on a computer very much. So I don't know where that came from. And then the low back pain started. That snowballed into neck, shoulder, hip issues. I then moved from North Carolina, where I was. I moved to Illinois, and I started work as a fitness manager. And so at that point, I went to a chiropractor, and she did some manipulations around the SI joint. And within maybe like 2 months, just everything exploded. My shoulder pain immediately got worse. The neck pain got worse. My groin started giving me like sharp pains. My SI joint was burning. And from there, about eight or nine months later, the left side joined in. Practically, I don't think there's a part on my body that hasn't hurt at some point. I mean, I felt like my body all of a sudden was made of glass, you know, like I was afraid to sneeze because I was like, something's going to break, which isn't how I grew up, because I grew up very, very strong and my body was always very strong. And it just didn't make sense that like now I couldn't step off a curb without hurting myself and developing like some other chronic injury or pain. So that's kind of what had been going on the past 2 years. And of course, I've tried every treatment under the sun for the past 3 years, just everything from Prolo to this, to that, the other thing. And so I basically have been told or thought to believe that what I'm dealing with is something called the malalignment syndrome. And basically it says that when your pelvis is out of alignment, which mine was, I had the whole short leg, the one hip higher than the other, that type of thing. So whenever your pelvis is out, you know, everything else starts to go out of alignment too. And therefore that's why my body was breaking down. So I've kind of got this locked into my belief that the reason I had all these injuries start coming about was that I was uneven, like my body and my posture was uneven. What doesn't make sense though, is that I wasn't doing any exercise during the time when my body was breaking down, which a normal, I think I was 28. I mean, that's probably not normal for a 28-year-old to not be able to walk and have like another injury pop up. So there's some things that are kind of, there are a lot of things that match up with that diagnosis, but then a lot of things that don't, because I would like to think that my body is stronger than that. But that's basically what happened. So the past 2 years, I've actually had 5 surgeries to correct like all these things that are breaking down on me at like rapid speed. And I should also note that I don't have any autoimmune diseases. I've been tested for everything under the sun. I don't have anything majorly wrong with me other than these orthopedic injuries that keep just popping up everywhere. So I had surgery on the right hip, surgery on the left hip, surgery on the SI joints to stabilize my pelvis. So my pelvis is now perfectly level. Which should mean that everything should go back to normal, which it's not really. And then I also had shoulder surgery and my shoulder still hurts. So I don't see how it's humanly possible to have surgery in this many places and to have like none of them feel 100% or even 90%. My shoulder feels like it didn't even have surgery. It kind of probably only got about 10% better. But I guess basically my question is how do I know for sure if it's the malalignment syndrome or if it's TMS kind of just running rampant?
Well, first, I feel bad that you had to go through all of those surgeries because it's frightening and expensive and time-consuming.
Yes.
These TMS physicians will tell you there's no such thing as malalignment syndrome. I was told that same thing.
Really?
One leg shorter than the other, the hip's higher.
Yeah.
I used to wear a shoe lift in the one left foot, and the doctor did that. And it kind of worked at first because of the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would forget it, and I'd be in pain. And then I realized later, that's my brain believing it. You can't. I talked with these doctors about this many times over 10 years, and this alignment problem is just a myth. It is a myth. You know, I don't care how I sit or walk or do anything these days. Alignment means nothing to me. I have no pain at all. With you, those are all red flags, TMS red flags. Everything you mentioned, you know, carpal tunnel, bam, bam. These flags are going up. Flares are flying up in the air. That's. I don't know if you ever got the diagnosis from an MD, because they're the only ones that can give the TMS diagnosis, but it sure sounds like it's TMS and that you had all of the surgeries for nothing. That's what it sounds like. But it would help to go have a TMS doctor look at you. You know?
Right.
Carpal tunnel, we know, is a man-made disorder. And in the early 1970s, they got together and they came up with this thing. Let's call it carpal tunnel. Well, we know that's TMS because these people were virtually all healing. There's stories all over the Internet of people that went to Dr. Sarno who healed from carpal tunnel.
Uh-huh.
So not being a doctor and I've never seen you, you know, that doesn't even make it any better. I've never seen you and I'm not a physician. But all those other things sound like they could be part of the TMS process. Hip, the piriformis thing, I had that. I remember when that thing used to cramp. Oh, man. That was but this alignment problem is a myth that the chiropractors have. They've made a living off of it. And I had two good friends that were chiropractors.
Oh.
No longer talk to me. But that's true. They were keeping me in pain because I kept going back thinking that my spine was out of alignment over and over for, almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And once I stopped doing that, like Dr. Sarno said, stop all of the other therapeutic modalities. You know, and people look at him with a horrified look on their face. Stop physical therapy. Stop all these things that keep you thinking that your body is broken because it is an unconscious emotional process. If you have TMS, and I don't diagnose it, I've never diagnosed anybody because I don't have the ability or the authority to diagnose it.
Mm-hmm.
Once they think they have it or once they're cleared medically or once they're told they have it, then I work with people to help them. But if you do, all those things are just your brain trying to find a physical cause, which is
uh-huh.
the entire body of Dr. Sarno's work, is as long as you keep chasing those causes, then it's going to continue because you're
right.
not getting to the point that your body is okay. And he told me and Dr. Sofer both, belief is the most important aspect by far. If you don't fully believe that you have TMS and that your body's okay, you're not going to heal. You have to get to the point where you say, I am fine. Now, that doesn't happen originally. No one believes it at first. Everyone has doubts. It's part of the healing process. I didn't believe it either. But if you keep doing the TMS work month by month, you start to erase that doubt as you become more aware. Yeah, that's why. But you have to come to the point where you say, my body's okay and it's been okay. That I've been reacting my entire life to a mind-body process. Do something that's totally outside of my consciousness. In other words, you don't know what's causing it because you yourself have repressed it into your body. You don't know what it is. Because if you
mm-hmm.
knew what it was, you wouldn't have the problem. The pain
right.
would go away if you knew what it was. You haven't pinpointed it or you haven't really recognized that, this is what's happening to me. That light bulb hasn't gone over, but it sounds like you're starting to turn the light on a little bit. I mean, you're here. You're here with this. You obviously know some about it. You know, I talked earlier, I don't know whether you heard the opening that I said, but Dr. Sofer and Dr. Sarno talked to me about this. You can't pick and choose what you want to heal. You can't do it. It doesn't work that way. You can't say, I think this hip might be real, but this is TMS, and this knee might be real, but it doesn't work that way.
Mm.
You have to fully jump into the psychological park and say, I'm fine. But that is scary. It's scary to people because now you say, if I'm fine, then I'm not fine. You know, so I'm suddenly not fine. But there's nothing wrong with you. You know, it's just something growing up or somehow you develop this pattern of how you handle life or how you handle stress is to just push it aside.
Mm-hmm.
And Forrest said a little bit earlier, he was part of that too. You know, you just learned how to work yourself through life, through your daily habits, and just shut everything mm-hmm. else off. But your body tells you, hey, there's knocking at you. There's something going on here with you. You know, I'm sending you a message, a clear message. But we tend to focus on the body, which is the problem that I was just talking to with Richard. The problem is the medical industry keeps helping us focus on our bodies by ignoring the important parts that Dr. Zaffirides knows is true. That because he also had the pain. You need to at least get yourself cleared medically that you're healthy to try TMS healing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to really hunker down and, like Dr. Suffer says, get to work. It's time to get to work, to do the hard work and find out, okay, why am I doing this to myself, you know, outside of my awareness? What happened? Who am I? What's my personality? All those things.
Right.
Take a deep, deep, deep introspective look that Jung called the shadow. You know, take a good look at this shadow. Because the more you deny the shadow, he said, the blacker and denser you make it, and the more problems you will have. You actually feed it. So when you start to realize this is who I am, this is how I react to life, that begins to shed light on it. He said it's this great catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this work so many times, and Dr. Sarno did it for 50 years. You know, he practiced medicine for 50 years, and he saw it continuously work. And the new surgeons and the new doctors that have gone to see him and are doing his work, they are seeing it work in his work in all different types of fields, of rheumatology and psychology and general medicine. This process works if you believe it. But if you don't accept it, if you continue to believe that there's something wrong with your body or it's misaligned, then it will continue. It will continue. And it sounds like it has continued, right?
Yeah, it has. I mean, I'm definitely better than I used to be, but for how much work I've done, I mean, I should be like running marathons by now. Like, I should be fine. You know,
yeah.
There's my body's still holding on to something, so...
Yes, something. If you talk to anybody, maybe you could just talk to his therapist.
Get Steve's book. I assume you have Dr. Sarno's books?
I have one of them. I got his healing, the little one, the healing back pain.
Well, take it. That's a great place to start. That's the book
one,
helps Steve.
Yeah, that was my thing. I will always owe my life to that book. I revere that book. It's right next to the Bible for me. I got it right there.
Maybe I'll get that guy Steve's book.
Yeah. I think he should. It's a good one.
But the book is good.
It's a great one. Yeah.
Actually, too, another thing in my life that this might help somebody else, too, but the timing of when my pain began is interesting because I had an eating disorder from when I was 11 years old until, like, maybe 23, 24, and I had no pain, like physical pain, my whole life. You know, I did all sorts of stuff, and I didn't have any physical pain. But as soon as I recovered from that, about a year later is when I first started, not even a year, probably 6 months is when I first started getting, like, the pain symptoms. And I just was like, this is weird because I've never really had pain before. So, I mean, maybe that's just another way of... I don't know. Maybe they're all connected, like OCD, I've heard.
Yeah, that's an equivalent. Because now you're focusing on the event. OCD is repetitive behavior. It really doesn't have a purpose. Because
mm-hmm.
What you're doing is diverting your mind's eye away from what's painful for you to look at emotionally. And it's anxiety. OCD, you know, it gets your mind off the anxiety if you keep doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But why is the anxiety there? Anxiety is unexpressed anger. And why is the anger there? You keep peeling back these layers, and I think Forrest hit on it perfectly, you know, the word awareness.
Right.
It's becoming more aware. Do I fit this personality type? That's why I put that chapter in my book. Do I have TMS, Steve-O? I get that so many times, so many times. That's the second most asked question is, do I have TMS? The first one is, so you're trying to tell me this is all in my head. That's the first question. And no, it isn't. But all thoughts begin in our head, of course. All of our thoughts begin there. And it all begins with a single thought and how the body reacts. And I think Alan Gordon does a really good job with this. I heard just a small piece of him one time. He was talking about how you're thinking in the same groupings that you did before, you know, and you're overlaying them on the future, and you get caught into this thought process that's wrong. And how to get out of that? Because it begins early on in life. You probably had symptoms when you were little and didn't even recognize them. You know, colds or flus or nosebleeds or earaches, I don't know, whatever. These are all TMS symptom imperatives. Anxious children, they get the growing pains, they used to call it. Now we know it's TMS. There's no such thing as a growing pain. And we know earaches and sore throats and that are all anxiety. You know, and I had, when I was little, I had rheumatic fever. Missed a half a year of school, and I found out Dr. Sarno had that same thing, and a lot of these doctors had these heart murmurs that I had from it, you know. And some of these people had heart murmurs their entire lives, and when their TMS went away, the heart murmur went away.
Huh.
Yeah, there's a guy that I know, he had 45 years of heart murmur, that extra beat, and it went away after he found Dr. Sarno's work and healed his pain.
Oh, wow.
That extra beat quit, because that's part of the autonomic activity that I talk about in the book in Chapter 2. The autonomic nervous system controls digestion and breathing and heartbeat and all that. All those things are disrupted. And, of course, I don't know if you've had any of those equivalents either, you know, heartburns and skin problems, just basically joint pain and things like that?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, thinking back, I remember in high school, there was a brief period where I had chest pains, and I couldn't find anything wrong with me. It went away.
You knew the exact medical term, right? Because you looked it up.
Actually,
I was impressed with you there. What was it? Quadratic form.
Quadratic.
I ran across that term too. That is part of the personality, the TMS personality, or the type T. They love information.
It's
a survival mechanism. They figure the more I know, the more I can survive. But when they're on the internet, and I did it too in the 1990s, when the internet came out, I was on there trying to find every disease that I possibly could have had. And then I saw Dr. Weil say, don't hang out like that. Don't go looking for them. Don't get into groups who talk about pain all the time. This group doesn't sit around talking about that. We're talking about how to get out of it. You know, and the reasons. This is much different here. But just to go constantly listen to people talk about it. Oh man.
Yeah, I found that being on the Facebook pages, because now there's a Facebook page for everything that could be wrong with you. Like there's a Facebook page for hip pain, and I found that like when I was on those, I almost felt like if I would read enough of somebody having something, like I almost felt like I was getting it, catching it.
That's a common statement that I hear too. It's called contagion. Social contagion. I use the memetics example of passing things on, and I gave several examples of how that works.
Right.
How people pass on diseases and disorders, and that's the rotating hall of mirrors that I spoke about a little bit ago. We're constantly reflecting what's around us and our own lives, and you have to break out of that hall of mirrors because we are getting things from each other. I went back hundreds of years and looked. I got cut out in editing in my book, but there were disorders back then that went rampant in societies. Biting manias, where people were biting each other. Dancing manias, where people were dancing. All of a sudden, people would break out dancing.
Oh, and like flash mobs.
All over the place, yeah. Weird things happen socially, and people mimic those. And of course, Dr. Sarno was the first modern doctor to recognize back pain as being in vogue, because ulcers were at one time before that in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Ulcers were so in vogue. And now he said, where did they go? He pointed to the article at the New York Times saying, where did they all go? His opinion was that joint and limb pain and back pain took it over. It'll be something else. Dr. Sofer tells me he believes it's foot pain. When he started his medical practice, early on, nobody had it at all. And now almost everybody has it, you know. And from what I saw in researching, it was hand pain. So many people have hand pain, and they blamed it on the computer use because of the rise of computers. But you can imagine how unimportant the computer is, how easy that is on the hand. How could that cause a pain? You know, we used to work with our hands, and we used to work with real typewriters that were much worse. But all the people that are healing from this carpal tunnel, or RSI, or RSD is what they're calling it now, repetitive stress disorders, they're healing from it with this knowledge. So we know that there's nothing wrong with the body itself.
It's been really interesting for me to be a part of that, because my diagnosis was always RSI, and there's this mailing list that I used to go to sorehand, and I'm sure it did me so much more harm than good. and it's just it's amazing to see how that mailing list is kind of falling apart, because too many people are learning about TMS, accepting it, and then getting better. And, you know, there are some people who are never going to accept it, and you want to help them, but you can't. And, you know, that's their choice. You have to respect that. But, yeah, it's big changes. And if you go on the wiki, the tmswiki.org, there is, on the left-hand side, you'll see success stories by symptom and diagnosis. We have maybe 80 pages of just lists of success stories by specific diagnosis. I think on the RSI one, it's, if you printed it out, it would probably be 3 pages long. You know, just a paragraph and a link to someone's story, a paragraph and a link to someone's story. It's huge. It's amazing.
It sounds like the RSI is gone now and it's manifested somewhere else.
Oh yeah, the RSI went away like within a month. It was just this brief, like, unexplained, because I was not doing any computer work at that time or anything, really.
That's the way it works. but you can also have triggers. See, you had no trigger. That's what I called phase one that McCorm mentioned earlier, the phases that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Phase one is out of the blue, an acute attack. Boy, they can drop you, too. But if you're not really fearful of that part, your brain will scan and it will say, oh, she's not afraid of that too much. I'll go somewhere where it really makes her afraid.
Oh, that makes
I'll
sense.
Go into the hip. Or I'll go into the heart. The heart is a place that you don't want to mess around with, you know. And but I've seen very few pains there. I had the only time in my life when I read Dr. Sarno's first book, I got chest pains. That was the first time for about 15 minutes and it went away. Now I know that it was the blood was altering its flow and the autonomic activity, and it's scary. You know, that's frightening. And the vertigo, I think, was the most frightening thing I had of all when I was falling down.
Oh.
That was I thought it was over. This is it, man. Time's come. Because they couldn't figure anything out. I had so many symptoms. I felt bad when I put the book out. And people said, I felt really guilty that I wasn't as bad a shape as you are. I never thought about that. I didn't mean to make people feel guilty. I just wanted to show them all the problems that I went through and that you can heal from them.
Right.
Completely. And so far, so good. I hope you get it. I hope you read it slowly and don't just read it real quickly. Understand what's in there.
Yeah, I do think that this is probably playing a part in what's going on, or more than playing a part, maybe the whole thing. I'm still pretty new to it, so but I'm
good
it's hard for me to like jump in and believe like 100% right away.
Nobody
that
does.
I think it will sink in.
When you read my story, you'll see I didn't believe it at all, but it was still true.
You threw the book across the room, right? Like you had healing back pain.
Yeah, Dr. Soper sent my manuscript back to me after he reviewed it. Yeah, don't throw this across your room. He was teasing me because he saw violent reactions to it in his office.
Really? Yeah.
One of his patients got up and stormed out and slammed the door when he told him, "I think it's emotionally induced." The guy came back a few days later and apologized to him. He said, I've been talking it over with my wife, and you've been good to my family for 20 years. You know, all these years, you've been a good man to me, so I'm willing to listen. He listened, and his pain went away.
Oh, wow.
That's how it works. That's how it works. But like I said earlier, you have to believe.
Mm-hmm.
You don't believe in it. Because your brain knows whether it believes or not. The problem is we tend to only believe what we can see.
Mm-hmm.
And so it helps to have my story. That's why I did it. If someone else did it, I can do it. When a doctor says it, you go, maybe. When you see the scientific information. And that's why I told Dr. Sofer and Dr. Sarno, listen, it's the examples you use that the people really like. They go right to those examples. I need to see somebody had what I had. You know?
Right.
But so that's why I get all these wild emails. Did you ever hear of Fangliclio Myotola Sinusitis Quadrant? I don't know. I didn't go to school to memorize all those medical terms. But most of them have been TMS when I pass those questions through. Most of everything I believe that we get is from an emotional process now. I would have never believed it before. barring anything like an accident, of course, you can fall and hurt or be in an auto wreck or something, or you can be exposed to poison or things like that. Those aren't mind-body processes. You know, if you drink cyanide, that is not TMS. I can put that on the record.
Well, and I did put cyanide on my cereal this morning. Maybe I should stop doing that.
But yeah, you have to believe in it, and it sounds like you have it, but you know, I would just say, you know, it sounds like you've had too many exams, actually. They're keeping you in TMSing. And just to make sure you're healthy enough to begin, and then get the material and just read it and just start connecting with it. Start asking people other questions. Write to me if you want to, and write to these guys. They're good at what they do.
Well, we're actually, I'm going to chat with her. We've got a phone call lined up this weekend.
Oh, good.
And you can move on to Steve next.
Yeah, okay. I'll get in line.
Yeah, there
okay.
you go.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you.
You too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that's terrific. Okay, so here's a question from the forum. It says, hi, Forrest. I am most interested. I'd asked for questions to ask during the session. He said, I am most interested in Steve's Nike moment from the book. Yeah. Lots of movement, but no healing happened for maybe 12 months. For him. How does one get a sense of what activity or exercise to do and when to do it? My body and brain just aren't in sync yet. Thank you for your efforts. Any thoughts on that? Like, what is the right amount of effort? Now, I have a sense of where you're going to take this, but I'll let you say it yourself.
I'd like to hear what you say first, because you've been great all along here. Well, how would you answer that?
You're so kind.
Let's flip the tables.
Right.
I'll follow up.
Fair enough. I would say that it depends on what you want to do. I think that the TMS is about, or that healing from TMS is about getting beyond a focus on your body. So in this situation, if you want to go out and run, then run. If you want to go and use your computer, use your computer. That's what I did. You just want to put it behind you.
Yeah, that's a good point. It reminds me of what I forgot to say in the introduction that I can re-say again if we do it. Is the journaling. It reminded me of that. People always ask me, am I journaling properly? I did it 10 minutes yesterday and 15 minutes the day before. Should I do it 12 minutes tomorrow? Or it should be 18 minutes tomorrow. Oh, my God. It's TMSing again. You know, journal when you feel like it. And if you feel like writing for 19 straight hours, do it. Stay through that. Keep writing. If you're locked onto something and you're going and you're uncovering things, keep going. Don't stop. There's no right or wrong answer for journaling. This is part of the type T personality, is, am I doing it right? You know, am I doing it right? You are doing it right because you're doing it. Doing anything is doing it right, unless you're focusing on the body, like you just said. That's a good point. My Nike moment was the moment of believing in TMS, like I just said to the last girl, belief was everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was vacillating back and forth. My pain was getting worse and worse. And worse until I could no longer function and the room was distorting. Oh, that was horrific. And I thought, well, I don't know if I should believe in this Dr. Sarno guy, you know. He sounds like he knows what he's doing, but I don't know. Who believes anybody these days, right? So
right.
All of a sudden this commercial came on my television, just do it. And I looked up, oh, yeah, look at my life now. What do I have to lose by trying this? I'm at rock bottom. What am I saving? You know, what am I saving things for? Why not try it? And so I started, and it started to work. But if I understand that person's question, they said they're going back and forth and they're stuck. Is that what they were saying?
Just said brain and body not just in sync. Hasn't been no healing happened for around 12 months. I'm not sure if he's referring. I know it took you a while to get the healing. I don't know if he's referring there to you or to himself. But it's possible that he's not healing.
Can that person come on?
This is in the forum. I asked if he's online. I think he's going to listen to the recording.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that I answer correctly, because sometimes I don't understand the question, how they intended it. You know, communication's everything in life.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure what that person means. I wish they could write to me and ask me that again or restate it or something, so that I could make sure they understand it, because understanding is everything.
Yeah.
If you can't understand it, you know, It's wicked. If they could rephrase that, maybe.
Okay.
Or maybe we already answered it. I don't know.
Very possibly. You gave a bunch of good information there.
Well, you answered it. See, I got out of that one. I blame that one on you if you didn't. Pretty smooth, huh?
There we go. I loved what you were saying when you were talking about your own story about how it got worse for a while first. And that's something that I've noticed a lot. When people first learning about TMS, very often it may not get worse. Sometimes it gets worse. Sometimes it gets better. But you just see a lot of changes. And what I often see is I see totally different symptoms. And I'm like, wait a second. You know, why is it that, you know, you've been having foot pain for years and all of a sudden you start doing TMS and your shoulder starts hurting? Like, where did that come from? But you just see it all the time.
That's wild, isn't it? That's wild. And I didn't, in Dr. Sarna's first couple books, he didn't have that symptom imperative in there. You know, that hadn't come along yet. And so you start to freak out. And I think that's where Fred Amir's book really helped me there, because he talked about the changing symptoms a little bit, you know. But also, I don't know, when did the symptom imperative come out in the Mind-Body Prescription? Is that when they came out?
I don't know. I thought it was in Healing Back Pain, but perhaps not. I read them backwards, so I wouldn't see the absences.
Yeah,
I read, you know, the more recent
you
ones.
You saw the light first, and then the
I got the divided mind first.
That is wild, and I put that in bold in my book, a bold statement. TMS healing is nonlinear.
That's
it's
so
important to understand
that.
Yeah, because I fell back time again and time again, and oh man, and it's funny how you think you're so confident, don't you? Until you fall back. And then, oh, help me. I'm never going to think that way again.
It's real now. Yeah.
I know. 5 seconds later, oh, God, help me again. But that the confidence comes tumbling down as soon as the symptom rises or it shifts. Because now that new shift is, maybe that one's real. Maybe the other one was TMS. Oh, and then until you realize, wow, my brain is really evil. It really wants to do a number on me, but it's about getting rid of that anxiety, you know. And now, the deeper issues behind the anger and anxiety are things outside of my understanding. You have to go to an expert to get to those. But I understand that it is the anger and anxiety because of the type of personality and how they handle life, how they react or don't react to life. It's you trying to express something through your body. The unconscious mind doesn't know how to speak, so it expresses itself through the body. That's its language. I'm angry. This is irritating me. I'm resentful, remorseful, sorrowful, all of these things. It is speaking through the body, but it doesn't know how to speak. You know, the conscious part of us learned how through the brain and the tongue and the mouth. We learned how to speak. So the pain is the virtual language of the unconscious mind. And so the more you understand these things, the more aware you become. Okay. And the proof of the pudding is in the eating. It's an old English saying. The proof that this is true is Dr. Sarno proved it true, and I proved it true, and all these other people that are healing like you, people who helped build this network and people that are members of it, they are living proof that it works. So that is the cool thing. That is the coolest thing of all. It actually works. I remember that on Dr. Sarno's audio tapes and Healing Back Pain. If you think this is all, you know, something out of Grimm's fairy tales, I can only say that it works. He raised his voice up. It works and has worked in hundreds of people, you know. And now I'm sure it's in the millions. You should see the people I get on that Facebook page. Like, do they come onto my page, Steve Ozanich, and say like, no? Do they come to Great Pain Deception and say like, no? Do they come to the TMS page I created and like it? No. They come to John Sarno, MD, like all around the world. Ding, 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 ding. Korean. Some guy wrote me a letter in Korean. I had no idea what he was saying. It was all of these wild symbols. But I could tell it was a thank you, Dr. Sarno, to Dr. Sarno. Ding, ding. They like him. He is a hero to many of us, you know. And
he's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. Amazing man. Good man. Good man. But, yeah, did he get a response from that other question about...
No, I think Michael reinvented. He's probably in Australia or somewhere and can't listen. That's the way it works sometimes.
I'm surprised how many people from Australia email me. There's an epidemic down there. There is. It's disproportionate to the size of that country. I don't know how many people are in there, but we have about 10 million in Ohio. I don't know. Australia can't be that populous, is it? Is there 10 million people in Australia? I can't believe how many people have this TMS. But it's cool. People from around the world are picking up on it, and they're immediately recognizing it in themselves, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Panda Girl there?
Panda had to sign off. She's in the UK, and it is, well, she's got kids. So,
yeah,
we lost her.
I just wanted to say, hey, some of the names, I'm trying to look at this.
She is sleeping, in fact. Honey Bear is...
Go wake her up.
We have a different pair. We have a Honey Bear and a Panda Bear. And Honey Bear just got headphones. I'm going to see if I can unmute her without her headphones. We'll see how it goes. I think we'll get a little bit of feedback, and then we're going to have to...
Squealing? Okay, I'll
take care of myself. No, it won't be loud, because you'll just hear what you just heard. Yeah, okay, so... Honey Bear, do you want to just tell your story a little bit? Let's give it a try. See if this is absolutely terrible.
Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hey, I heard that.
Turn your speakers down just a little bit, please.
Okay, is that any better?
I think it is.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You can hear me? Okay.
Yep, let's go for it.
Honey Bear. Can I call you Honey Bear?
Yeah, that's my nickname. It's kind of what my husband calls me, and
that's why I wanted
20
to know. I didn't want your husband to get mad if I call you Honey Bear.
No, he's downstairs watching some show. He's kind of got jet lag. He just got in from Ireland last night, so he was on business there. So.
Oh, cool! I love Ireland. My daughter just got back from there. She went over the summer to take a course there at Galway University.
Mm-hmm.
But
that
so how are you doing?
So okay, so back to the TMS stuff. I have been aware of Dr. Sarno's work since early February. So I've read all of his books. I've got yours on the way, actually, at the moment. But I feel like I'm stuck. I feel like I'm not getting any better. I feel like I'm actually have increasing symptoms, increasing anxiety. I've started working Dr. Schubiner's book. And most recently, I just spoke with Dr. Strax on the phone last night, actually. And I'm thinking of going to Chicago, which is my hometown, and killing two birds with one stone by seeing him for an official diagnosis and visiting family and having some of that yummy pizza. So So at the beginning of this webinar, I heard you say something. I was kind of moving around in the kitchen and trying to get my things set up to where I wouldn't have to be attached with the headphones. And I missed a part of what you said about opiates and with Dr. Sofer. You said something about how Dr. Sofer won't even see somebody if they are taking opiates in any way, shape, or form, or maybe I missed something.
Well, that's she heard that. That's good. That's a good sign. Yeah, I wanted to mention those things that I'm getting the most questions on, and that's one of the new ones is the meds. And so I wanted to mention that a little bit. You know, of course, I'm not a doctor, so I don't do it, so I refer everything to him. And, yeah, they've discovered that, and I don't know if all TMS doctors are that way, but they have discovered that it can inhibit the cognitive changes necessary to reintegrate, to integrate the TMS concepts. Now, he's talking about opiates, you know, right there.
Now, I'm going to interrupt briefly. If you can turn the speakers down just a little bit more.
Me?
Yeah, I'm hearing a little bit of feedback still.
Is that better?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Is that better?
What do you say, Steve?
Yeah, I can hear it, but as long as she can hear us, I guess that's okay.
Are you hearing my dog snoring, maybe?
No, we hear echoes of our own voices coming out through the speakers and then in through the mics. Classic problem with computer audio.
It's a loop.
Sorry.
It's a loop. I put the dog to sleep. That's not a good sign, is it?
No, she always snores. Let me try the headphones again.
All right.
But I don't know if...
Is
Does that do anything different?
Let me say something. Headphone solves it. Okay, now we can continue.
That's all right. It's a little bit, but that's all right. The opiates can inhibit the cognitive processes, in their opinion. Now, I don't know if all TMS doctors feel that way. They rarely agree on anything. But sometimes it shows a lack of confidence in the TMS diagnosis that you think, well, I have to take this. Something's wrong. I have to take this. So he urges people to taper down, taper off, never quit, stop taking anything, of course. And they never give advice on medications because they don't know why the original doctor gave them, you know. So it's a very touchy, tricky subject that I just wanted to mention. I'm getting those questions, and he gets a lot of them too. He said, Steve, welcome to my world, because that is a big question, the medications. And he says this is just a patented answer I give because I can't work with someone over the internet because their doctor may have a different reason for it. And even as a physician, he can't step in and say anything. But his own clients, he says, listen, I want you to get off of this. It's going to inhibit the changes necessary to integrate the TMS concepts. And it shows a little bit of lack of belief, full belief in it, if you think you have to take something to heal when you don't have to take it. Anxiety medication is a totally different beast. You know, I don't know. Sometimes they have to put people on them if they're out of control. But if you can get off of them, his advice is always taper, taper, taper. Slowly get off of that stuff if you can. And I have had people tell me that as soon as they quit taking their medications, the pain went away, just like that. The beginning of this year, I don't know if it was February maybe, somebody said, I did. The medication was triggering the pain. In other words, like Pavlov's dog and the bell, ringing the bell and salivating. Every time the body sensed the medication, it kept reassociating it to the pain. It kept looping the pain. And so by cutting that tie with the pain medication, their pain suddenly quit. Now, that's rare, just like reading and healing. It's rare, but it happens. So I'm not going to give any advice. I can't do it. I don't have the education or the practice to do it. But that's what they're telling me. I wanted to pass that on at the beginning. At least you heard that. Some other people may have heard that too.
Well, yes, I heard it, but I don't take it on a regular basis. I don't take it every day. I don't take it every other day. When the pain gets really to a place where I just, because I'm in pain 24/7 all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was. So, yeah, I hear you, sister. I was in deep pain every day. But
so,
that's good.
So I might take maybe one in a month or two in a month or three in a month, but never more than five in a month.
Oh, well, that's pretty reasonable. Yeah, I think he's mostly referring to, you know, four times a day, two times a day, things like
that. Okay, good.
But you also have to say why, you know, I'm taking it. Why am I taking it? Why is my anger rising so that pain increases that certain times like that? That's what you need to be tackling.
Yeah, I know.
Boris said that earlier, the triggers. What is it that's triggering it from time to time? That's more important. And I don't know. They don't even know. Nobody knows the effects that the opiates and stuff have on the integration of it. But in their opinion, they've seen that it hindered the healing process. And so once again, they're just saying what they've seen because they're clinicians. They're the people on the front lines. They're seeing everything. And so I've received that question this week alone probably about six times. So I just wanted to say that up front, that I've been asked that, and I can't tell anybody anything about medications, but that's their opinion they passed on to me, and that's all I got to say about that, like Forrest Gump. All I got to say about that.
well, I did mention it last night to Dr. Strax when I spoke to him, and he didn't seem really concerned about it. I'm still planning on seeing him for my official diagnosis. And, you know, I could understand he, in the email that I got from him the other day after my brief synopsis of my history, he, you know, he says, well, I can't really, he says, I can't diagnose you without having seeing you in person. And I totally understand that. But when I spoke with him last night, he said it really does sound like you know, that's what you're dealing with over the years. Because this has been going on for, like, you know, 18 and a half years of a headache constantly. Yeah. And prior to that, it was a diagnosis of general anxiety disorder. And
there you go. Yeah, the anxiety.
So, you know, I know, and I know that, I knew, you know, my husband left for Ireland 2 weeks ago, and I had my mother over here, and we had an incident where I was trying to set some boundaries with her, and she got upset, and boy, the next day I had this massive abdominal pain, something that is really kind of been a new thing over the past 4 months. So
yeah.
I know that there's an emotional connection, and I'm beginning to find the power of journaling, because the other day I got my pen and paper out, and I just started, I just said, what am I angry about? And I let it rip. And boy, that little girl inside really came out and had a lot to say.
Yeah, good for you. So, did the abdominal pain go away after that?
Well, I have the abdominal pain so much that day, but my head started feeling better. I will say, though, though, 2 weeks ago when the abdominal pain was really bad that day, my husband had just left. I had the thing with my mom that night. And then on Monday, I woke up with this abdominal pain that was trying to get me throughout the day. I pulled out Dr. Sarno's list of the 12 daily reminders, and I started getting mad about it, and I repeated the one reminder that says, I will not be intimidated by or concerned with this pain. I started repeating that over and over again, and that pain got really bad to where I almost was doubled over with it, and then it started to subside. And so I proved it to myself right there.
Yes,
but then, so for about an hour, I literally wandered around the house cleaning, repeating that phrase, I will not be intimidated by this pain or concerned by this pain. And I almost felt like it was just going to completely go away. But then about an hour or so after that, it kind of came back and was bothering me off and on through the day.
Yes,
but I proved it to myself that it is
proved,
an emotional pain.
That's the best proof there is. You proved it to yourself. You know it can happen. If it can happen for a little while, it can happen forever. The gaps between my pain started getting longer and wider. I had like 5-10 seconds without pain. That was like a little glimpse of hope. And then 10 minutes, and then an hour, and then weeks, and then months. It gets wider. So that is fantastic. As you were talking, I also just thought, I just found out recently that Dr. Guatz,
mm-hmm.
He told his patients to get off of this stuff too. So I forgot to say that to you. He's a TMS physician in New Jersey, I think. Is he in New Jersey? Forrest,
mm-hmm.
Is he in New Jersey? Do you know?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, we'll check our list.
I found out from someone who just saw him that he told him get off of it. So I'm going to contact him. I would like to contact him and establish a relationship with him to find out what his opinion is. I can't give out medical advice, but I can tell people what they say. You know, and everybody's different, though. It's a, like I said, it's a personal responsibility. You have to do what you think is right. And nothing else matters except what you think.
Well, I don't really feel like I'm dependent on them because I don't take them on a regular basis. I'm talking about the pain pills. But, you know, sometimes when I get to a place where it's just so draining, and so, yeah, I guess I just have to, I do really work at, you know, I meditate daily. I do yoga, not yoga for the stretching, for the physical, but just for the emotional, to try and bring mindfulness into my day. And I know all those things are very key to my situation. But, yes, I do work very hard to avoid taking the pills.
Right. And remember, though, if you, like you say, you take a pill a certain time all the time, that's chronicity. It's not dependency, but it's chronicity. In other words, if say, I only take one every Monday or one every other Monday, that's still a chronic thing. You know, it's a conditioned thing. You, whatever it is, it's triggering, could be triggering at the same time. Now, if it's randomness, that's just in the emotional process.
Yeah, it's randomness. It's not like every Monday or every other Monday or, you know, every
well,
Friday.
You're doing well, then. You're doing fantastic, then. It sounds like you understand it, and you've made some odd gains, but like Forrest was saying a little bit earlier, it can jump around and confuse you. But that's mm-hmm. part of it. That's why I specifically wanted to state every phase that I went through, every symptom that came up. another one came up, and another one, and another one. And all of a sudden, I couldn't see a certain way, and I was falling down, and it was wild. Mm-hmm. But I kept sticking to what he said over and over and over, and it kept working. And then one day, I realized I was healed. And, oh, I wanted to mention that, too. Don't try to do yoga perfectly and to meditate perfectly. People get wrapped up in these rituals. That is part of the problem, too, worrying whether people were doing things right. Am I doing this right? You don't need to do anything, Dr. Sarno proved. You really don't need to do any of these rituals except to understand what's going on. But I advise, you know, to lower the anxiety, to lower the anger, to lower those levels. It's very important to do things like meditation or yoga. And you said something, you didn't do them for stretching. You can do yoga for stretching. As a matter of fact, I recommend it. I'm saying, like I did in the beginning, in the introduction, don't stretch for pain relief. That is a terrible mistake. Mm-hmm. Stretch because it feels good. Stretch because you want to be more flexible. Stretch for good health. There's nothing wrong with that, and it works nicely. Don't avoid stretching because you're afraid it's going to fall into the hands of the physical again. That's not true. I said in that introduction, your brain knows why it's doing it. You know whether you're doing it for pain relief, which is wrong. And you know if you're doing it just because I want to be more strong and flexible. Your brain knows that. And I stretch because I don't want to, you know, you're not very mobile at some point. I stretch and I run and that. Part of feeling better as a person, it makes me feel better. But I never did it for pain relief. And Dr. Sofer said to me, never stretch for pain relief. Never. Mm-hmm. Never, ever. So you can do stretching type yoga. So you can do anything you want to do. But don't get caught, don't get yourself, and this personality is very conducive to getting into doing everything perfectly. I meditate every day. I do this every day. I journal. I'm doing all these things. Guess what? That's making you angry inside. That you have to do this every day. I got to do this. I got to do this. I got to do this if I want to heal. Stop. You have to stop trying to heal. Trying to heal is monitoring progress, and that delays healing. I think the best thing to do is once people understand TMS and they've read these books and that, get rid of all that information and just go live. Just go do what you want to do. Join a club you want to do. Go learn something. Go out with your friends. Go live. Stop. They need to stop every day trying to do these TMS healing rituals. That is, once again, playing right back into the hands of the brain. How's that? The hands of the brain. You are falling for it again. In other words, you're TMSing still when you're trying to heal. And at the end of my book, I wrote The Paradox of Healing. When you try to heal, there's a paradox to it. The best thing to do is take away the situation that's causing the pain, and the pain goes away. You never try to take the pain away. I never try to tell people to take their pain away, because that's, once again, TMSing. You need to set up the situation in your life. Set up the lifestyle. Deal with the things you need to deal with so that the pain is not necessary. Take the reason for the pain away, and you take the pain away. So don't get too wrapped up in those daily rituals, okay? And if you need a pain pill, if it gets that bad, then that's, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I'm not a doctor.
Well, I'm looking forward to going out and seeing him. I just think that official diagnosis maybe can spur some healing, because I kind of feel like I'm my own worst enemy, that I can make progress, but then something happens, and then I beat up on myself, and then it like takes me back to square one.
Oh, we do. This personality does beat up on themselves.
That's
where Dr. Sarno's word perfectionism clicked with me. Yeah. We want to do these things right, you know, but we will fail. If you're a human being, you will fail. And it's how you deal with the failure that makes all the difference in the type of person that you are. Well, this personality doesn't lend itself to failure well. That's why I put the HSP, highly sensitive people, in my book, a little section on her. Her name was what? Silverman, I think was her name, Linda Silverman. No, Elaine Aron was her name, Elaine Aron, the author. The person, they don't handle failure well, she said. You know, so they push themselves even harder. And that just makes you angrier. And that was another great thing Dr. Sarno said, was they go around angry all day, perfectionists do. And they don't even know it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that was another light bulb moment. I am angry, you know, because I'm doing things I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to do things that are right. Instead of living, I'm trying to do what's right, you know, and why not just be who I am?
There's so much pressure. That's the biggest thing is the pressure that we put on ourselves.
Self-imposed is the worst one, right? Self-imposed pressures, not the outside ones.
Nobody else cares what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, the outside pressures, they don't help any. You know, they add to our own internal pressure. You keep triggering it. So, yeah, it comes back to philosophy. That's why the last third of my book is about philosophy of life and that. You know, it doesn't deal with TMS as much. Dr. Sarno talked about TMS. He explained it so well, I didn't really need to do it anymore. So I talked about TMS up front as fast as I could for people who had never heard of it. And then from then on, I started talking about life in the book. Life, relationships, criticism, shadow, all those things. Those things are the growing aspect of becoming a better person, not beating yourself up. But one of the problems with TMS is we don't know that we're doing that to ourselves. We're not aware of it. It's outside of our consciousness. So, well, I hope you let us know. Is it Dr. Strax you're talking about?
Yes.
Let us know how that goes, because the more you know, the more we know, and we can help other people.
Yes, I will. I'll post about it on the forum and let everybody know.
Great.
So thank you for talking to me. You've been very helpful.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And let me give you one word of advice before you go. Let sleeping dogs lie.
Yeah.
Get it?
Do you get it, Homer?
That dog over there, I thought you were telling me I didn't have to journal, and I was going to say, wahoo!
See?
But I know that was
an actual dog joke, a real dog joke.
Yeah, okay. She's a little bit disturbing. She knows not to come in my room in the morning when I'm meditating. And I want to say this. I didn't start doing yoga and meditation as part of my TMS. I started that before I...
Good.
I learned about TMS. So that's something I just want to do for my own self, not as part of my TMS healing.
Right. Well, that's good. That's even better to hear. Very good. Very good. Let us know how
it
goes.
But the dog knows not to come in the room. When she sees me go in the room, I just, you know, I used to have to say, Abby, go someplace else. But now she knows not to even come in there. But I do have a cat that comes and curls up on my lap and keeps me there. So.
All right.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to your book.
All right. Very good. Very good. Thanks for buying it.
Okay. Thank you.
It's a great book. Okay. So you mentioned that in the last third of the book, you started talking more about philosophy. And that's, I think, one of the things I find most interesting about all of this. And one of the things I enjoy the most about talking with you. I was just wondering, what do you feel like TMS has taught you? Like, how did you... To some degree, I feel like, okay, I don't want to say that TMS is a gift, because it's not. But to some degree, it is a gift, and insofar as it can teach
it is,
us how...
It isn't, yeah.
Yeah. Insofar as it can teach us how to live our lives differently, what do you feel like TMS has taught you personally in your life? Like, how has it changed you?
Yeah, well, it's a metamorphosis, of course.
Yeah.
And, like, the life is a tough teacher that gives you the test first and the lesson later, of course, and... the lessons being learned now, I think. I think it's ongoing. It's not like, oh, okay, that's the lesson. Okay, I got it. I think it's continuing. And it's more of that awareness, expansion of the consciousness. I think it helped me and helps people discover that they do have some type of purpose in their lives and that maybe it's not being fulfilled. And I've had a lot of people say, I think that it is this disconnect from where we're supposed to be in life and where we're at. We're nowhere near where we're supposed to be. And deep within us, that consciousness knows that we're not where we're supposed to be at.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is very profound. And I saw myself that way. I have a message to give to the world, and I did it. But there's much more. There's many more lessons. There's not a single new birth that suddenly awakens you, but there are many, many, many moments. And I think it's hard to pinpoint one because there are so many. But that you're not being who you are, that is a big one. You know, I am not being who I really am. I'm not expressing what I need to say, what I'm here to say. I am mimicking what other people are saying. And she just alluded to that, too, a few minutes ago. But Many things. And I think most of them are evident in the book, but that is a good question, though. Can you answer that? Have you learned anything?
Oh, I've learned a lot.
About yourself, you learn about everybody else.
Is that true? But, I mean, the most important things, I think, are probably the ones that you learn about yourself. I think for me, it was recently I've been learning a lot about emotions. I think that I wasn't very aware of all of the emotions that I was feeling. And I think that because of that, I wasn't as compassionate as I could have been towards myself. So
yeah, that's another good point. Excellent.
Yeah.
She just said that too, beating yourself up on things.
Yeah, so true.
It's like, well, if things fail, then I got to do twice as hard next time. If they fail, right. I got to do it 10 times as hard. Well, guess what? Maybe you're doing it the wrong way.
Right.
Maybe you just need to switch the way you're doing it. You don't need to work harder at it. Maybe you're just doing it the wrong way. So life becomes a lot easier when you begin to accept things instead of fighting them, right? When you battle things, you add power to the resistance. That's one of the reasons I put that in there about the cancer cells. When they give chemotherapy to cancer patients, these cells actually recruit more cancer cells to go after the chemo. And so Dr. Weil was pretty observant on this, and he said, I found out that my patients were doing better when they didn't fight cancer and say, this is my enemy. When they said, okay, this is a part of me that has manifested somehow, for some reason, that I'm not really aware of, they did better. And so it is good to accept the pain as, all right, this is my pain. I did it. Now why? It's part of me. It's part of how I don't express myself. It's a part of anger. It's all these things. Instead of saying, I hate you, pain. I hate this pain. I can't wait to get rid of this damn pain. That just actually makes it worse. So you yield. You overcome by yielding to it, by saying, okay. And I'm not saying, you know, when I say accept the pain, you know, I'm going to live with it forever. I accept it. No, that's not what I mean. You know, you accept that it's there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it is part of you. I think even Thich Nhat Hanh mentioned that one time, I think, in one of his books. He has so many. I think he writes one every day. I think he's got like 50 or more. But
wow.
He mentioned that. You know, he said, if you have a pain, you send it your love. Send it your love. You don't say, oh, damn, this pain, I hate you. Because it's part of you. And I think it's probably true for most diseases that people get. If they could say, all right, this is part of me, my personality, my makeup, things I haven't expressed, things I want to say, the way I react to life, I think that people will do much, much better, you know, and a lot of that begins with what you just said, the compassion.
Mm-hmm.
The compassion for yourself. You can't have love for somebody else if you hate yourself. You can't really have compassion unless you have some compassion for yourself. It begins with you, and that's a great thing you just said. The compassion for yourself, because, man, these people beat themselves up badly.
We do.
I remember, yeah, 10 years ago or so, maybe 15 years ago, before Dr. Sarno, BS, I call it, before Sarno, somebody said, look at you. I said, what? They go, well, you've got, like, 2 degrees going in college. You got 5 projects going. You're a trainer. You're a golf analyst. You have all these things going. And that's the first time I stopped and I went, wow, I do.
Yeah.
I have so many things going. And they said, if I put my shoes on today, I'm happy. You know, they were telling me they just lived the day in mindfulness in the moment. And I was creating awards and reading and I was doing all these things. And I had piled stuff on me that it was unbelievable. That's part of that third phase that Karen Horn and I talked about in the late 1800s, the unassailability. There's the compliance, the aggression, and the unassailability, the withdrawal. She put it under the heading of withdrawal. Keep getting award after award, she said, and then you can just say, I'm okay, I'm fine at that point, you know. But you're not really living a life. You're not living it mindful and appreciating the day, the second, the moment, everything that you have today. And that's the basis of Buddhism, of course, the very basics. The Buddha sought his entire life to find happiness until one day he realized, wait a minute, it's here, right now. This is the truest happiness I can have, is this very moment. I'm trying to insert myself into these other future scenarios where I can become happy, and it will never happen because the only true happiness is right now, and people aren't appreciating it because this type of personality plans for the future. Okay, if I do this today, then Monday, and then Monday I do that, it'll be better. That's why I have those pictures in the book, those illustrations, and the anxiety guy on the cover pushing through the light.
Yeah.
You can't. Right now is the day to be happy. This is Saturday. Everybody should be enjoying themselves. They probably worked hard all week. Don't beat yourself up. You know, and that's part of it too. Now there are a lot of.
It's like it's a decision. It's a decision to be happy. It's a decision that you deserve this compassion. And you deserve to be happy.
Right, but you have to let go, don't you, of something else. You have to let go of some goals and dreams and things. Let go. People are afraid to let go. They keep hanging on to life. Hanging on to certain things, and it's frightening. And if you use the example, the metaphor of the little bird, it can never fly until it lets go of the branch. But the branch that it's holding on to is its current knowledge. It's everything that it knows and it understands. And so if he lets go of that, he will see sort of greater heights. But the fear is what keeps people from healing. The fear that they may become themselves at some point, because there's something that they want to express that they're not expressing, and by letting go of the physical cause, they're going to have to become what they were meant to be. And that guy in that purpose-driven life talked about that, Rick Warren. That's the most frightening thing of all, he said, was change. And, of course, the whole book's about the purpose you have, that everybody's got a great purpose here. And I think we live happier when we live with a purpose. We definitely do. When we feel like we're adding value to people's lives, we are much happier people.
Oh, yeah.
Much happier. Yeah. Those are some of the things that I learned from it too, but I would have intellectually understood those before, but not lived it.
Yeah,
you know, and these people are intellectualizers, the type T. Like Thomas Jefferson was a big type TMSer. He got migraines every time he got mad, and he was real quiet, and he didn't speak, he didn't express himself well, except through writing. He expressed himself geniusly through writing, but he didn't express himself well because he had a speech impediment. And he was self-conscious of that. And so it's all that personality. Someone brought that up early on, that personality. That's why I spent a lot of that time in the book on the personality, because it's big. But there are some people with childhood traumas that are stuck there, and that's a whole other ballgame.
Well, maybe that's a ballgame we should go to next in terms of kind of wrapping things up. Maybe we could talk
sure.
a little bit about childhood trauma and what that
sure,
is.
I'm not
and,
an expert on it. I can talk all you all. You know.
Well, in some sense you are. I mean, your book really connects with a lot of people. So, you know, what is it that you've learned about childhood trauma? I guess while we're on this theme of what you've learned, what did you learn about that?
Yeah, well, by force, once I understood what the good doctor was trying to convey, I started thinking, was I traumatized?
Yeah.
Is there something I'm blocking out? And No, I wasn't. It was just an atmosphere, you know, an atmosphere. Because a lot of people have asked me, what was it with you? A couple of radio hosts in L.A. and one in Dallas, Texas said, what was it with you when I was a child? I don't know. Whatever it was, it's long gone, and I don't worry about it because I'm fine now. But I think a lot of it is just an environment. But there are kids, you know, that were just abused, I mean, beaten and abandoned. Of course, abandonment is the biggie. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Good point. Abandonment is the issue. And people get confused. They say, oh, well, I wasn't abandoned. You don't have to be abandoned. Mackenzie told me it's the fear of abandonment. And Karen Horney said 100 years ago that parental indifference was the worst. That it was better if the child had been hit or physically abused than for them to be emotionally isolated.
Yep.
That is the worst thing, is the not getting the parents' attention, she said. And that's Mackenzie saying the same thing. You know, to be separation, the separation anxiety, doesn't have to be physically left. Although I do know some people that were physically abandoned. Their parents left them, and they had severe TMS. So abandonment comes in many forms. So when people say, my parents, they never abandoned me, that doesn't mean that. And Mackenzie told me, he said, listen, every time the mother goes to the store to a three-year-old, that she abandoned him in his mind. Because they're like a dog. They don't know if she's coming back. They have no idea. They think she's gone forever. And the children panic every time the mother's not in their visual eyesight. So abandonment is huge, and that if the mother was gone a lot of time when you're young, that's abandonment to the child. It only matters through the child's eyes what happens. It doesn't matter what the parents think. The kid sees that it's abandoned. And Mackenzie is just a guru on this stuff. He's got it mapped out month by month by month when the mother was not in the child's life, the symptoms that they get later in life. He can tell people a lot of time what age that they were traumatized or they felt abandoned by their body movements, how they hold their arms, how they sit down, how they turn their head, things like that. He's got asthma mapped out and depression mapped out. He told me around 26 months old was the most dangerous time to be abandoned as a child. These people are often violent or have all kinds of health problems. And once again, it depends on through the eyes of a child. If the mother's not there, maybe another loved one will come in and fill up that gap, you know, to the child. But that child still knows it's not mommy. That's the important thing. And then, of course, the father has a big role later. The mother's role is very important. Mackenzie's book came out at the same time as my book. It's called Babies Need Mothers. I always thought that was a cool title. But he talks about that in detail, that the mother is the most important influence. And then the father, because kids like boundaries. The father sets those boundaries normally. Now, in the modern world, the mothers do often. You know, now they're the ones yelling and saying, you got to do this and that. But it's a good dual job for people. They've got their roles to play, their purpose in their life. But the father has a very important role, too, because people want praise from their father. Kids want, they want to know they're doing the right thing. Am I doing the right thing? You know, and dad, if dad says I'm doing the right thing, then it's okay. That's why I put that example in my book about Ray Romano. He said, if my dad would have hugged me one time, I would have been an accountant and not a comedian. And I immediately knew what he meant, you know. Kids want to know whether they're okay in their father's eyes. Am I doing okay in my dad's eyes? And when they're not, they keep trying to go out and do harder, work harder, trying to get dad's praise. I want dad's praise, especially sons. But if his dad would have hugged him, he would have known, I'm doing okay, my dad's hugging me. But he said his dad never hugged him. He never knew that. So he said in that article, I needed praise in bigger circles, you know, in audiences. He needed to get a show on television where there were millions of people now praising me. Because he didn't get that one, you're doing okay, son.
Yeah.
And every boy knows how important that is to a son. And I've worked with a lot of these people, and they tell me that is it. And when I'm talking to them, they just break down crying right there because they know they wanted their dad's praise. It's so important. So that is the childhood aspect, and that's all I know. I don't want to go outside my boundaries because there are people that are experts in childhood problems. But it begins there, as far as the personality developing. And it all comes back to that word I made up, trichordification, to pull the heart back together. That's a good way to end this, by the way. That's a good way. I believe everything that we do is to try to connect that other person. And later on, I found the work of Alan Watts. He was a very famous meditator. He went to China, studied, and brought it back to the West. He was one of the first people in the 60s. He brought it back here. Meditation. We're out of touch here in the West, this industrial society, which we were at one time. And he said that we suffer in the West because of isolation. That's the key. That's right. And we want that other person. We want the mother. We want the father. We want the friends. We want people to praise us. We need to be connected. And so I believe that we're trying to constantly, everything we do, if you look at your job or many of the things you wear, what you drive, you're trying to pull other people to you in some form or another. And I do believe isolation is the key, is the reason that we suffer. I really believe that. And it goes back more philosophically and even religiously at some point, you know, connection with higher sources and things like that. But in this life that we understand, it is definitely about connecting. And Dr. Sarno did that. He relayed that to the dismay of many of his colleagues. But he's helped more people than all of them combined.
Yeah. So well,
I really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much. I feel like, you know, this is a little bit of what we've done is, you know, we've brought some people together, given us a chance to connect with each other, hear each other's voice finally. You know, you've talked in your book about how important Dr. Sarno's voice was for you. And I think based on the response that we've seen in the chat that this was very important for a lot of other people as well. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for the invitation. You're doing great work here. It looks like at the same time I was writing, you were building.
Indeed, well, not as long. You've been at it for a while writing that book.
Yeah, well, you know, life takes you sideways sometimes. You have to quit for a couple months or here and then pick it back up. Some of the toughest parts was talking to the physicians. You have to work on their schedules, and when you're waiting for answers, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to get it right, and I hope that it helps people, because I did it to help people. If I wanted to do it for the money, I would have done it in some other field, you know. But the more successful it is, the more this message gets spread, and so it's a catch-22. You know, it has to do good. You know, you've got to get this message out there. And this was fun. I really appreciated it, and I hope that some of these people that get a hold of us tell us their stories and tell us what their doctors said, because we learn from them every time. Because in a way, you are the first one to try to connect these doctors and therapists together into a network, something like a peer network, kind of, right?
Peer network. That's a great idea. Let's build that.
You're connecting them. Now we're hearing what this CMS doctor says and what this CMS doctor says, and we're getting a big picture.
Yeah.
You're providing a map, like a hub. You're a hub, like of a wagon wheel, all these people around the world, and these spokes are coming back to you, and we're hearing, this doctor's saying this, and this one's saying this. And the more aware we become of what they're doing, right and wrong, and that what's working, the more that we're going to heal. So this was critical. And I hope to come back someday and talk to some more people.
Anytime you want. Anytime
All
you
right.
want. Pleasure to have you.
Very good. I appreciate it. And it was nice talking to you again, too, there, Forrest.
Yeah. Always a pleasure. I love chatting. Yeah. Love our chats.
All right, then.
Okay. I'll let you hang up, and then I'll just wrap things up.
All right. I will talk to you later.
Okay. It's a pleasure.
Okay, bye.
So that is it, folks. I just wanted to just do Becca just wrote good night in the chat. Thank you, everyone, for staying with us. It was a fascinating and eye-opening chat. I am very impressed that our numbers, they have held steady. It's been a long chat. It's taken you some endurance. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for your questions. This is why we do it. Just like to emphasize, as I always do, that none of us are doctors, none of us are practitioners. We share our personal opinions as peers. That's what we do here at the Peer Network, is we share our thoughts. We hope you find them helpful, and we will be in touch. I hope to see you on the forum in the weekly, every Saturday peer chat, 3 to 4 Eastern Time. And finally, thanks so much to all of our volunteers. Becca was the prime, was helping to feed me questions. Morcom jumped in. He was amazing as well. Thank you for joining in. And the callers. And then also just having